Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. Read us where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise that our quiet don't sing able. We're off the bag in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shazir the Terrible. All rise for King Shazir the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Are you out of your mind?
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. The time we stopped, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Or if you do want to go over and see somebody else's wonderful chat, jump over there to People for People Radio and visit with those nice folks over there. So the question to start off with today is faith and justice, question mark. There's a lot to be said in justice, truth and justice, and the American way or the world way, whichever way you want to look at it. Anyway, so what is truth? What is justice? It's hard to say these days because some of the things that we see going on in the world can get a little bit frustrating. And for a lot of the folks who's my age and maybe a little bit older, you know, we got a little bit different view on the way things were meant to be, or the way that we believe or perceive that our life and freedoms were to stand for, so to speak. You know, I recently got summons to jury duty. If you go up and look up jury duty and you watch the process and actually listen to a lot of people, you'll hear people trying to get out of jury duty all the time. In my view, jury duty should be an honor. It should be something to be taken seriously because you're actually supposed to be there to ensure that somebody, some of your peers, get a fair trial. If you know, they've ever found themselves in a position to be having to defend themselves against said government or accusations or whatever, maybe even in the case of one another. But nonetheless,
yeah, man.
The whole thing is supposed to be, you know, to ensure that the Constitution and the rights of the citizen are protected, you know, when they're accused and so on and so forth. So it should be an honorable thing.
But you should.
Unlike most people, I take words in this situation a whole lot more serious than probably the average Joe. I take things when they ask me a question such as if the jury came back or the judge or the prosecutor produced evidence that was beyond a reasonable doubt, could I come back and find this particular person guilty of whatever crime that they're being accused of?
Been there, done that.
Raymond, please let me finish.
I'm sorry. Los Santos, put it down on me.
So, basically, like I said, I take this really serious because it is a serious thing. You are now basically you have a if any time that I may potentially be trampling on somebody else's rights or freedoms, you know, that's not something that I take lightly. You know, as a former military individual and a former officer, I have served my country in so many different ways, and what I believed that I was fighting for in those days was, you know, truth, freedom, and justice, and to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the land and so on. It's the honorable duty that I'm thinking about. And so, with that said, fighting for freedom and justice is a serious deal. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's an honorable position to be able to defend, you know, your people, your family, your country, the world, you know, against tyranny or evil at any turn, whatever. But nonetheless, when it comes up to the point where I'm actually put into position to judge somebody else, I'm really apprehensive about that whole deal. The modern day court systems are I'm skeptical. Let's just say that. That's about the best I can do on that deal, because there are certain things that I don't understand about court systems and how they function, and that when it comes down to actually how I was summoned to court under threat of, you know, fines or penalties or whatever, I was ordered to court, and knowing that actually I have to go to court and be subjected to searches and, you know, body scanners or whatever to just actually get in the court, then when I'm standing in the court and being picked out of the jury pool for whatever said trial, I feel almost as if I would quite literally need to have me an attorney present in order so that I don't get myself in trouble for trying to speak the truth. When they ask me, could you find this defendant guilty if the evidence showed beyond a reasonable doubt, in my heart, in my mind, the burden of proof, I raise the bar even higher than beyond a reasonable doubt. The burden of proof would have to be beyond a shadow of a doubt before I could even remotely consider coming back with a guilty plea that would...
Beyond a shadow.
That would, you know, potentially take away from somebody's freedoms. Now, the court systems these days are also questionable because, you know, there are people out there that say that the flag that actually flies in the modern-day courtrooms are maritime flags because they have the gold fringe around there. And see, you'll get different stories on, you know, different sides of views of whether or not that's a military flag and whether or not that's actually a military court.
Relax. Relax.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
So... I don't know. That's the thing. And Raymond, please don't.
I'm sorry. I'm listening to you. But you're talking.
Excuse me. I'm going to jump in here because...
Okay, thank you.
As a guest on Shaziz's show many times, I like to listen to what he has to say fully.
I do, too.
till he's ready to draw us in.
All right. Sorry about that, folks. I'm trying to pick my words carefully because this is really seriously important. All right. In my view, when you're selected for a jury trial, that's not something to take lightly. You know, somebody else's freedom is actually on the line, if you understand what I'm saying. And if you know, the jury, you know, basically hears evidence, and if it, for any reason that evidence was biased or even put together improperly or whatever, if their rights weren't from start to finish protected by the officer in question that, you know, charged them with the crime, well, you know, we know that there's a lot of people in this world who end up in jail and turn out later on, years later, to be completely innocent of the charges. And so that's one of the reasons why I feel that it's a serious deal. So if I'm going to court, first off, and the way that I'm summons the court under threat of fine or, you know, whatever, or even in the documents that they have you filling out before that you actually go to jury selection, that you have to answer properly, otherwise you risk being charged with contempt of court or perjury or something like that. So I gotta be like really protective of what I say in front of the court, because most courts don't want to hear what you have to say. And of course, as a person who believes in the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights, if I go to court and I know that the judge doesn't want to hear nothing about the Constitution, the law enforcement officers, you have actually heard cases and videos where law enforcement officers, they laugh when somebody tries to, you know, quote the Constitution to protect their rights. Now, if you backed it up to when each of these individuals took their position, they were basically swearing an oath to serve and protect and uphold the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And so, to me, if an officer laughs in the face of a citizen who may not be well versed or be able to quote properly, you know, how the Bill of Rights or the Constitution or anything like that, but if he addresses that officer and says, you know, hey, well, I got a First Amendment right to speak, you know, and feel like I'm being violated, well, that officer should understand that there is a First Amendment that allows this individual to say something. Or against illegal searches and seizures, or, you know, the right to keep and bear arms and all that kind of stuff there. It doesn't matter which one of those rights that we're talking about on there. They're all, in my view, important, because the Constitution to me is what separates us from a tyrannical government and says what the government cannot do to the people. So jury trial, whereas most people might think it's not that big of a deal, in my view, is a lot bigger deal than people understand. And so when presented with that question, and I have to speak honestly, matter of fact, the first time I got pulled in for jury duty and they asked me that question, I said, you know, I have developed a skepticism against the executive branch of government. And so if the evidence would have to show beyond a shadow of a doubt, and see, that's the deal. Terminology and words that you say actually have meaning. And so if I'm saying, yeah, beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, what a reasonable person would think about, well, unfortunately in this case, I guess I'm just not reasonable, because it has to be irrefutable beyond a shadow of a doubt before I'd ever even remotely consider stepping on somebody else's toes as far as their rights go. And so faith and justice, I would have to say honestly, if we're going to speak truthful and honest, I have to say that I have no faith in the justice system. I have no faith in the executive branch of government or the judicial branch of government. The legislative, I can't necessarily say the same, because they have a bunch of people that come together as representatives and they make the laws. And so, it's up to the people to lobby against a law that they don't approve of or whatever. But if it actually makes it into the law and the executive branch is there to enforce that law, then as long as the executive branch does the enforcement of that law honorably, then to me that portion, the executive or the legislative branch of government has done its job for the people. But once it gets into the executive branch of the government and the judicial branch of government, where now that law has to be either interpreted or enforced, now there are certain things that need to happen in order for me to feel that justice was prevailing in whatever scenario that was going on, such as, you know, was this individual read their rights, or you know, were the, in any of their the during the process of this, was everything the way that it's supposed to be? You know, was there any extenuating circumstances or things that would you know, affect my decision on, you know, the outcome of this trial? Now, I'd be just one person on a jury trial, so that makes me, in most people's eyes, that's not that big of a deal, but that one person can make or break whether or not a man loses his freedom or not. And so this is why I take it very, very, very seriously. So, yeah, I've been summoned to jury trial, and it's basically told me that, you know, I'm demanded to show up, and I know the circumstances of which I'm going to actually have to be subjected to in order just to get in that courtroom, and then to be able to speak truthfully to the court. You know, I feel almost as if I would need an attorney to stand there by me to protect me, to say, you know, I whisper in his ear, hey, you know, should I say this or not? Because this is how I feel, but this is going to probably make the judge mad and maybe retaliate on me and fine me for contempt of court, or maybe even make the prosecutor, or actually when I said, at the time that I said it, about I had developed a skepticism against the executive branch of government, there were 40 law enforcement officers sitting right beside me when I said it. And the shock's on their face. Now, they probably look at me like, oh my God, did you hear what he just said? Basically, what I told them was I didn't trust the police. All right? And that's because of circumstances, what I've seen throughout my lifetime. You know, being a law enforcement officer, a peace officer, or a police officer, whatever you want to call them, it doesn't matter. Being into law enforcement comes with a huge responsibility, and they should be held at a higher standard than the average Joe, the average citizen, because of the job that they do. They are there to enforce the law. So if I write somebody a citation for speeding, and then I, you know, go down the road speeding myself, in my mind, that makes me a hypocrite. You know, I'm not no better than anybody else because I wear that badge. I'm there to basically work for, as a servant to the community, and do the job that I was hired to do, to serve and protect. But I'm seeing a trend, a scary trend going on in law enforcement. And I know that there's probably wonderful individuals out there that do the job honorably and basically want to, you know, serve and protect. And they believe in the kind of vision like I had back as a child whenever I wanted to be a law enforcement officer. When I wanted to grow up to be a police officer, I thought that would be an honorable job. But once I got there and I seen actually how the system functions from the inside out, inside the executive branch of government, and then I developed my concerns and skepticism, and I tried to do the job the best that I could under the circumstances that I found myself in. And I have to be honest with you, it wasn't pleasant. Now, I'm proud of the service that I did as a police officer. I'm proud of the service that I did as a Navy veteran. And I'm proud of the service that I did as a civilian. And I'm proud of the service that I've done all my life. For, you know, being my brothers and sisters out there, my fellow citizens, being a servant to the community. Now, I'm not by any means perfect, don't get me wrong, that's not what I'm trying to say, but I did the best I could with the lifestyle that I had been, you know, involved in. But nonetheless, when you talk about faith and justice, if you look out there and you listen to what's going on out there in the world, and this goes across so many different lines, political, religious, or whatever, it's a clear across the board. People always feel that they're not getting justice, and they'll go out and they'll protest, and sometimes they get violent and whatever. I believe that justice comes in a peaceful manner if it's done right, and that's the best way to go about it. So I don't advocate any violent overthrow of any government agencies or any law enforcement or anything like that. What I advocate is education communication between the law enforcement and the government officials, between the executive branch of government and the legislative and the judicial branch of government, to have the people basically be able to communicate their will to the government and allow them to know what they expect and what they do not want to happen. So when it comes down to justice, this is a big question. Do you have faith in justice as the status quo today? Do you feel that there's any possibility that we can actually work together with our elected representatives to turn this ship around before it gets so far out of hand? Right now, honestly, it almost appears to me that the citizens are against the police and vice versa, that, we got like two armies staging each other. I think last week's show I mentioned these First Amendment auditors that go out there, and that some of them seem to be aggravating the police just because they can and they can get by with it, see how far they can. But on the other hand, I have to compliment them because they're the only ones out there actually testing the line of what their rights are and so on. And in the process of watching these First Amendment auditors, you see that many of these auditors get assaulted. They get their cameras broken and they get pushed around, and the lack of knowledge of somebody's rights and how far that people are allowed to go or not go. The burden of knowledge should lie on the military man who's standing outside the military base. He should know that these citizens standing out there on public property should be allowed to do whatever they're doing, as long as they're not trying to break in or do anything wrong. Same as the law enforcement should understand that these civilians actually have the right to, whatever they can see in public videotape. And it's been tested in court. But nonetheless, it's not just that particular deal. It's when you get pulled over by a law enforcement officer, and if for some reason you feel like your rights are being trampled on, and you begin to quote the Constitution, and your law enforcement officer says, "Oh, I don't want to hear all that Constitution stuff," or whatever. Well, I'm thinking at that point, now we've really got a serious problem. Because that Constitution is what they swore to serve and protect. They swore to uphold it. Now, if the Constitution doesn't mean nothing to the law enforcement agent, and if the judge wants to hear no talk of Constitution, if we don't have time to speak our truth in court, then there is no remedy for the people. If I stand before the judge and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, well, I've got some reservations about, standing on jury duty because, I feel like I come here with a bias for the people against the executive and the judicial branch of government. So I don't think, honestly, that I can be fair and unbiased because of said skepticism. Now, that'll get me out of jury trial right out of the gate. But it's not my intention to get out of jury trial. It's not my will to not do my duty for my country and for my fellow citizens. And so if I just go there and I blurt this out before the judge, and the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney is going to love me. The prosecuting attorney is not going to want me. And the law enforcement agency and the judicial portion of the government are both going to be offended because I essentially just said that I do not trust either or. So you can see I'm between a rock and a hard place as somebody who believes in truth and justice and freedom. And so I got to walk on eggshells whenever I speak said truth, justice, and freedom because of fear of retribution from the law enforcement. Maybe they pull me over because, yeah, I heard what you said about cops. I heard you don't like cops and all that. Well, do your job properly, do it honorably, and you can earn my respect. It's that simple, and that's the same thing that I feel with the judicial branch of government. And so anyway, I'm not the only one here on the show, and I'm sorry about the way we started off in here in the beginning, because I try to be respectful to people, but I got to say certain things in order to set the stage of what I'm trying to explain to everybody. Not anti-government. I'm not anti-corruption. And I'm not trying to tell everybody out there to not trust your local representatives or anything like that. I'm not trying to degrade the law enforcement agency. I'm not trying to even degrade the court system. I'm just coming from the point of view of my experience with all these different entities that... Yeah, I'm at the point in this game where if I'm not hearing certain things that speak justice, then I need to speak out against it. And that's why I'm bringing this particular subject up, because my faith in justice has been rocked. And it's as simple as that. Now, maybe down the line we can resolve this issue, you know, such as something as simple as if I go in that courtroom and I don't see a flag that represents to me, from what I've understand about actually the design of flags, if I see what appears to me to be a Navy flag or a military flag, and I'm in a civilian court, then I'm concerned, because am I at a court-martial or am I at an actual people's court kind of thing? And do I see anything on the wall, such as a copy of the Constitution with a big bold deal that says, we protect we the people or whatever? So, you know, this is where I stand on, and I hope that's enough to get us started there, and I apologize to you too as well, because I had to hang up because that just wasn't working for me. Do either one of you have, by the way, folks, I've been joined by Honorable Knight Barber 3 Crow and Honorable Knight 2 Dog there, so any one of you guys got anything you want to throw in the mix there?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here, and I just want to say that this is a challenge for sure, because of all we're finding out about the system right across the board. It's not just the justice system; it's the whole system. And I'm in a position where I can't put my hand on a Bible. For instance, they ask you to put your hand on a Bible and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I've seen people put their hands on that Bible and lie through their teeth, you know. So the Bible to me, you know, I don't follow that, because my tradition is the Lakota tradition, and my people's tradition on that end, and I would not feel comfortable. So that would be my first argument, is that I can't put my hand on that Bible, because that's not what I believe in so many ways. I believe in the way of my people, which didn't have a black book, or it's a way of a universal law given to us for centuries and centuries, you know. Universal law has nothing to do with that, and because I believe in a different way of helping a person who has, you could say, done something wrong, in our tradition was very different, and it depended on the level, of course, of what that person was doing or had done or so on, but going to the courts, that energy, you know, I'm not too up on the new thing that people are finding out, and probably Patty, when she gets on here, she'd be able to address this more, is the crown that we're still under, you know, the law of the crown and the mariner's laws, you know, which is a lot of lingo that kind of puts us in a position where it's like it's a dead end, you know, to justice in that way. Is there really justice, you know? I mean, we've seen over and over again that some who think it's justice, in my perception, it may not be justice. So how do you fit into that system that has, I want to say, maybe a warped sense of justice that I don't agree with, you know? So I hear what you're saying. I could never participate in that type of so-called behavior. I'm not going to call it justice. So yeah, that's where I'm just going to start out with that, and maybe somebody else has some more information on this. So thanks for allowing me to be here today. And hi, everybody out there.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the whole system has gotten away from. You know, they always ask you if you understand your rights, right? And truthfully, I don't really understand my rights outside of the literal. When it says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, that to me says that it shall not be infringed. It's no ifs, ands, or subsection A, article B under the fine print and, paragraph D or such. It says plain and simple that shall not be infringed. When it comes to all the other ways that, rights were, worded in there, the verbiage, however, and even what is actually said in court, such as what I mentioned about, could you, if the evidence showed beyond a reasonable doubt, which basically means that what a reasonable person would consider as to be good evidence, and to me, because of my, I might as well just say loss in faith in justice of the way that the system occurs. No, my bar has been actually raised up to beyond a shadow of a doubt. I mean, you have to catch this person red-handed with the weapon or the stolen goods on video in front of as many witnesses physically possible, and it is completely and utterly irrefutable evidence. Otherwise, I couldn't come back and say this person's guilty because I wasn't there when it actually occurred. I can't take secondhand testimony from a law enforcement officer because I know that secondhand testimonies from law enforcement officers can be skewed towards to make sure that they don't get charged with false arrest and so on. So, when the court says something like, your word in court is hearsay, however, the officer's word in court can be used as evidence. That just told me now that that officer's word is more powerful than my word, and there is no balance of justice in there, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Now, why should the officer's word be stronger in court than my word? I mean, I'm supposedly innocent until proven guilty, so if I'm not perjuring myself in court and I'm speaking the truth in court, but I can't speak this truth in court, what the officer did or didn't say, because my word is considered hearsay, but by the court's own admission that the judge has ruled that the police officer's word in court is testimony. And so unless I have written documentation or evidence that can be presented in court, such as a videotape or whatever, that shows that this was going on, then my side of the justice scale is down here on the bottom. You see where I'm trying to go here? Anybody?
Well, if you allow me, this is what I've actually seen courts do in the area I come from, okay? The area I come from, you have a judge that is actually putting people in prison for 3 to 5 years. And this is just for having, getting caught with, a nickel bag of marijuana. And she and the prosecuting attorney got busted in her chambers doing cocaine before she does this. She's still on the bar. These guys are getting 3 to 5 years for a nickel bag.
Well,
and see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's another thing right there. The law shouldn't be any different for the citizen than it is the... it seems like here in the United States we have two separate standards. One for the ruling class. So let's go to three separate standards. One for the ruling class, one for the enforcement class, and one for the civilian. So there's a lot of things that go on in governments and even courts and through the process of the supposed justice system that you as a citizen wouldn't get by with. And
right.
You'd be under the jail, and they, for some reason, never go to jail. Now, when the citizens see this occurring, what makes you any different than me? When you're driving down the road in your car, and I'm driving down the road in a official vehicle, police officer vehicle, whatever, and you're speeding down the road, and I'm speeding down the road, I could pull you over. You know, I'm violating the law just like you are, but I could still pull you over. You can't pull me over. But if I pull you over, I can demand your information, and I can write you a citation, and it's going to cost you financially and take away from your freedom to move about and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, either way, there's a power that goes on right there between there, and some of them let that power go to their head, and they believe that because they're riding in a police car that they can break the law. According to the law in the state that I live in, if you are speeding in that vehicle, you are supposed to have not just the lights but the siren activated and be in route to an emergency. Otherwise, you are violating the law, but we see this constantly. Officers turn their lights on just so they can go through a red light or whatever like that. I can't turn my lights on, flash my lights, and go through a red light like that. Otherwise, I'd get a citation. So when you witness things like this and you know what the law says and you understand somebody's rights and that whatever, it makes you skeptical of the system. And there's so many people out there that are skeptical of the system that when it gets down to the point where the people don't trust their own government, they don't trust their own media, and for just cause, I mean, their track record stinks. If we're really going to be honest about it, the track record of the government stinks. And we're not talking about just here recently. We're talking historically all the way up to present day, the track record of how the people have been treated by their own supposed representatives. And it doesn't even stop there, because how you've been treated by some of the civilians out there. It's the civilians out there that are calling the law on you because your grass is too high, and so on. So sometimes the civilian becomes their own worst enemy, you know? That's how all these laws get put on the books and these rules and regulations. And you think that here in America that people are walking around in freedom, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, they may have the delusion of freedom. They may believe that they're free. They may believe that they have a constitution and a bill of rights, but the moment they speak out to the executive branch of government when they fear their safety or their freedom's in jeopardy for whether they, you know, they either did something or they were perceived or believed to be suspicious or whatever, and they try to exercise those rights, you would be amazed at how many officers don't even know the Constitution. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to wear that uniform, if you're going to sit on the bench at a court and be a judge, or even all the way down to if you're going to sit on the jury, if you do not understand how important that piece of paper is in that situation, then you should not be there. And if I can't sit there and protect somebody's rights, according to what I believe that Constitution is supposed to be for, and if the law enforcement officer cannot do the same, and if the judge cannot do the same, then or cannot or will not. That's another thing you need to understand, is that it ain't that they could not. The judge could protect you using your rights, and is supposedly there to uphold your rights in the process of doing what they feel they need to do as far as whatever trial you're going to. But if
you know, as far as justice all the way around, I've gotten to the point that, I've watched
police officers, and they're like busting sober people with because they pulled out of their car a half pint of whiskey that they actually pulled out of their pocket that I actually did see.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, it's going from the top to the bottom as far as corruption in the government, all the way around. As far as having faith in it, I kind of lost it a little bit.
Well, here's a key point.
You could say that most of the laws are outdated laws, number one. I know all laws are not equal. We could say that. And we could talk about, for instance, how the judge, the jury, and the executioner are on the street. That's what we're dealing with. Like, what's going on today with cops, running around the streets with more power than should be, Like authoritarian madness, it seems. And then there's blind obedience because we just basically are obedient, We don't question these so-called extortion rackets because this is what this is like. It's like a Ponzi scheme in the history of the planet. It's like one of the justice systems is playing us right now, like a big Ponzi scheme. You could look at this from speeding tickets to for-profit prisons, from bail bonds and overpriced jail commissary. You have, like, the poor people they're the ones who suffer. Your common people, the poorer people, who can't afford the bail bonds, and you have all this going on. It's like a plutocracy, an oligarchy, right? It's like an extortion racket. And you're guilty until proven guilty, or you're guilty until proven guilty.
Yeah.
You could say that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Well, when a patriot's perception of what would have been the executive branch of government becomes that they are no longer there to serve and protect, that they have quite literally become an armed revenue generator for the state, I can see exactly what you're talking about. You see what I mean?
Well, you're locking up nonviolent criminals, right?
Yep.
Pretty much. And I guess that's something... That's a money thing. It's a money scheme, And we see someone, a person of color, doing something or whatever it might be, it doesn't matter. They get a longer, heavier sentence than a white person, okay? That's been typical. We see that going on. So, there's no truth and justice, in that case.
Yeah, and it makes it, the system, the way that it's allowed to go about, it makes it easier for people that are put in jail for nonviolent crimes to literally fall through the cracks of society, because when you get out of, when you served your time and you go out to get a job, that record follows you everywhere you go. Instead of it being done
right.
Deal, I was punished, it's over, that's it. No, it's not over. And it won't be over probably the rest of your life. It will follow you around. And those officers may have been involved. Like Two Dog had mentioned some times back when he was younger, and how that he could have something as simple as a soda in a glass. And they're already expecting that, he's up to no good. And that's not just soda in that glass. And so his past followed him into the future when he should have, once he made amends to society, that should have been that. But it's not that way anymore. People have trouble getting jobs, and if you want a government job, you might as well just hang it up. If you've ever been charged with anything, now you just might as well not even apply. But, so, To have faith in the way the justice system works, first you have to look out there and measure up what's happened to everybody else in all this time. Well, how many nonviolent criminals, what they call criminals, how many nonviolent offenders are sitting in jail to this very day while there are other individuals that go under the guise of color of law that are getting by with all kinds of things? And even if you want to take it up to the highest levels of government, part of the military is the executive branch of government. And so if the executive branch of government is violating another portion of the Constitution, whereas in they're over attacking a foreign land, but it's they haven't declared war on this foreign land, you can see where the citizens down here would start getting to be concerned about whether or not this was a rogue government or not. You understand my point there? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand, I've been a buzzard man pretty much for mostly all my life over burial ground in my area. And if you can't trust the law, man, what do you do? To be honest, because what I actually found out, the law was drug running through the burial ground. So I'm just saying, if you can't trust it, what do you got?
Well, you know, there's something that comes to mind is this one case of this young man who was I guess, indicted for rape, and this particular judge gave him, like, I don't know, 6 months, I'm going to say. I don't really quite remember now, but there was such an outrage about this, but still in all. So down the pike, people were protesting this judge, and so he became like sort of like someone who people recognized or began to, I guess, look into his history, you know. And so come to find out later on, it's almost a year later, he was actually arrested for himself for pornography and all kinds of stuff, right? And he's a judge. And he gave this young person there, you know, 6 months, and I think there was another case that it happened to be a person of color who went into 5-6 years for a similar, if not the same, situation. So, but this judge, this person, this man there is like, you know, putting people into prison at his own whim, and of course, his own preferences for some dirty stuff himself, but gets away with it, and then has the right to put people in jail. I guess you'd say not from truth, and honorable justice. That doesn't come into play at all.
Yeah,
that's the system.
There's some really good conversations going on in the chat room over there. Anyone of y'all want to read those or anything?
Which chat room are you looking at there?
Shaziz's chat room over there.
Okay, well, I can't get to that yet.
Let me throw you a link. I would read it, but I'm kind of distracted at the moment.
Sure, show me the link.
All right, anyway, so basically, folks, it's not that this is not something that we can't do something about. Like, for example, when I mentioned those First Amendment auditors, all right, those First Amendment auditors, they provide a service, believe it or not, even if you think they're being aggravated, because it's an educational system between the citizens and the law enforcement. And until law enforcement actually start training their officers in understanding how people are serious about their rights. Even that person that is stumbling all over and saying, you know, am I being detained or whatever, you know, like that, and they laughing at this individual because this individual is trying to exercise his rights, you know, that's supposed to be his rights. That's what they, by definition, rights, you know. Nonetheless.
Okay, so I'm here on the site, and so hi everybody over there on Shaziz's link, and also people to people, because I think they're listening out there too. And so May says, sometimes even with evidence, they get fired then rehired after retraining. Where do you draw the line? I guess she's talking about, you know, like the police. Sometimes with evidence, they get fired and rehired, or anybody.
Yeah.
And then you have Stephen says, maybe that's where the saying blind justice originates. Yeah. And then May responds, crazy the way things are twisted. With over 5,000 codes and amendments in revisions, can't keep up. Some voted in past without being read. It's a sham.
Yeah. Yeah.
When law and morality, Stephen says, contradicts each other, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or losing his respect for the law. So take a look into this character. I guess you put up a link here. Frederick Bastiat. And then May says, anyone pledged to AIPAC, Israel Loyalty Pledge, I guess that's what that is, needs to be removed. Every congressman pledged to them before they take the U.S. pledge. Why? Yeah, that's a... I didn't know that. Did you know that? That includes the Supreme Court.
No, and there's a lot of things that I don't know. For example, you know, there's a movement that's been around for quite some time. One's a free man on the land and sovereign citizens and all that. Well, I don't know enough about terminology and words to go around and try to say, you know, hey, I'm a sovereign citizen or a free man. What I do know is that I can speak the language of what that Constitution says. All right, but when I go to court, I can't speak the court's language. And I don't know what's accepted and what isn't accepted in that courtroom because I haven't gone to law school. And I don't even know whether or not this is a civil court or a criminal court or a maritime law court or, you know, a UCC, whatever. I don't know the rules of that courtroom well enough that I could actually defend myself or anyone else for that matter. And so in order for me to even go and present myself in that court, I would have to take an attorney with me. And I'd have to have him explain to me. Can you explain to me in plain English what they're trying to say here? You know, because I'm just an average Joe with average speaking skills, language skills, however you want to say it. But words in court have so much more meaning, and that's why I told him that it has to be beyond a shadow of a doubt of evidence. Otherwise, I could not come back with a guilty verdict. And that's
well, you know, it's exactly like one lawyer that I had once, you know, in a certain situation, okay? And what he told me, a defense lawyer actually told me to do, and what he said is, when you stand up in front of the judge, you might as well plead guilty anyway.
Yeah, and that's sad. And,
whether you did it or not.
Plead no contest, which essentially is they probably got a better case than you, or for plea for a lesser charge, even if you're not guilty of doing something. I mean, if I'm not guilty of a certain thing and I know for a fact I'm not guilty, I'm not going to say I'm guilty under any circumstance. And in order for me to say that, if their case is better than mine, even though I am not guilty, I'm one of those innocent individuals that ends up in jail telling everybody, I'm not guilty. And that's one of the things that you'll hear that the inmates tell each other all the time. Well, everybody says they're not guilty. Everybody says they didn't do it, and they're here. But maybe they are. You see what I mean? And
well, even Charlie Manson said I didn't kill nobody, you know.
Well, if you were to be truthful, he didn't. He did put everybody up to doing it.
Right. Well, yeah, you see what I'm saying. He's saying he didn't do it because he didn't do it, but he did it.
Yeah. So that's the whole deal.
Well, so here's something. The incarceration, the U.S. leads the world. You know, the U.S. is leading the world in so many areas, right? Like, we're on the top. We're the best nation, blah, blah, blah. It leads the world in incarceration of its citizens, has approximately 2 million people behind bars. That means a wrongful conviction rate of 1% would translate to 20,000 people punished for crimes they didn't commit. And then on death row, you know, you have a whole other bunch of people that we're seeing some of them there, like, you know, that have been there 15, 20, 25 years, and suddenly, oh, now they didn't commit that crime, and so now they're free after 20-some years of losing their life, in a way, and there's ways that they have been found innocent through DNA, you know, now, and jailed but innocent, you know. It's pathetic. These people have lost pretty much everything. How do you start your life all over again with that stigma, you know, wrongly convicted?
Grizz, you know. Grizz over there are people for people. Radio put a comment in the Skype chat, says, tips hat to Shaziz for his service. Thank you very much, and thank you for your service. Even if you weren't in the military, as long as you're out there serving people, as far as I'm concerned, that's service. The waiter, the waitresses, and so on and so forth. Anybody who's out there doing anything to keep a community together, or, you know, doing anything, helping out charitable events or anything like that, thank you for your service. You know, it's not just military. It's police officers. It's the cook. It's the guy who picks up your trash. It's your brothers and sisters down the street. They're looking out for you. Thank you for your service. That's how I feel about it. He said, if and when possible, interact with them to get to know them. One needs to know their stance in order to make a proper decision if the stuff hits the fan, as well as neighbors and such. You only own what you can control, yeah? And so, you know, there's so much.
Thing that really is sad, just let me say this, is the people who have been executed but may very well have been innocent, you know. That's the thing. It's just so messed up. Yeah. I'm just saying. It's just so screwed up, the system. So, go ahead, Patty. Hi, Patty. Hi, sis.
Oops.
There you go.
There she is.
I just heard my name.
I just said hi, sis.
Yeah, I'm working on my first cups, so give me a minute here. But, you know, this is one of my favorite topics. I mean, if you know me at all, I'm the naysayer. I'm the one that says, I don't need no stinking government, you know?
Yeah.
I just, I'm an intelligent person. I'm a responsible person. I'm a moral person. And if you got all that going for you, you don't need someone telling you who you are, when you can be who you want to be, and why you can't be who you want to be, and how much money you have to pay if you choose to be, you know? Just saying.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and drink my coffee now.
So, basically, I started this deal off by talking about faith and justice, and then faith in justice. That means you trust. You trust that, justice is going to prevail. You know, you have faith that the system's going to work out. And for some people, it actually does. You know, our system of government isn't a perfect system. But you gotta recognize something. Those individuals that are in those uniforms, they're people. Alright? And people can be corrupted. They can be bribed, and some of them join these positions just for the power or the prestige. You know, it's nice that you can go into a place and say, yeah, I'm a judge, you know? And judges are appointed for life. I don't know if you guys realize that, but they're appointed for life. And they actually have protection deals that will actually protect their pay and their decisions. And that, to me, kind of is kind of disturbing, that, you know, an individual, unless they're do something like that really shakes the foundations of the public's trust, then they're going to continue to be a judge. And, you know, like you mentioned, Barbara, that mentioned earlier, there's certain things that people were doing as a judge that, you know, they were turned around and basically had the power to make a decision over somebody else when their house wasn't clean either, if you understand what I'm saying. And that, to me, is concerning. So, if a judge can get by with doing these certain things, or if a law enforcement officers, and there's a lot of times when law enforcement officers will stand around while other law enforcement officers violate an individual's rights and not intervene. That's not right. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Is the oath to the office, is it just a ceremonial thing, or is it a serious thing? When I stood and I swore an oath to serve and protect and uphold the Constitution, not only before I went in the military, when I was in the military, when I was a police officer, before I was a police officer, and when I was a police officer, and I swore an oath to protect the citizens of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And that's the key right there. And that terminology has to be taken literally, foreign and domestic. The bad guys come from both sides of the fence. A bad guy could be in a uniform, and if you're standing idly by while you know for a fact that you've either been ordered to do something against the Constitution that is an unlawful order, or that you're watching as another officer who is sworn to uphold the same oath is violating the oath of office, I would be that one particular individual who would put the other officer under arrest for violating this person's rights. You see what I mean? And there ain't too many of them out there that would do that, but there are some who have. Any thoughts on that, folks?
Well, you know, to be honest, I've seen some police officers that are supposed to serve and protect you come right after the ones that they're supposed to be serving and protecting that ain't doing anything. One actually come up to me on the park bench just because I guess he didn't like what I looked like. I don't know. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they don't like what you look like, they'll come after you.
Well, and unfortunately, that has been the experience of a lot of the citizens of the United States from a lot of different races and so on. And it's even went as far as political views, because there are actually videos out there, if you want to take time to find them, about, somebody will see a Trump sticker on the back of a car or a Hillary sticker on the back of a car, and that kind of sways their decision, and they kind of look for something, to get this individual for. And so here you got that, NFL football team mentality where, the blue team and the red team over here, and, I don't like these guys because they don't think the way that I do. And so there you go. That person that's in a uniform that now perceives himself to have power over you, and you granted him authority by, allowing him to be, representative of your nation or your country or whatever, or your city. And, so he's there to do a job, public service. When his job goes beyond public service now to a political ideology or even a religious one, whatever, then the scales of justice once again get tipped against your... not in your favor, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I can say real quick about the NFL, and as far as the players that were actually taking a knee during the national anthem, a lot of that is taken out of content, because actually what got started was Colin Kaepernick started that because police officers were killing unarmed people. That was what he was doing. And it's all gotten completely out of hand now. But anyway, that's what it was about, that you got the ones that are supposed to serve and protect you that are shooting you in the back and you're unarmed.
Yep, and I can understand. And, the First Amendment gives them that right to do it. Now, folks, you got to understand this. I get really seriously offended when somebody burns the American flag. And that's not because that flag means anything more than the sacrifice that so many people behind me had went through in order to make this. And when I say sacrifice, I don't mean just the military. I mean the people, the average Joe, the people that was out there fighting for the rights of one another, Martin Luther King and all the different... major events in history that had to do with civil rights. Those people fought for that flag. Those people fought for the freedom under that flag. And so that flag means a whole lot more to me. And when I see people burning that, it basically it gets me frustrated, because all those folks, including Martin Luther King, who fought and died to ensure that under that flag that is supposedly there to represent one nation under God and freedom and justice for all, he gave his life for that. The military man gave his life for that. The police officer gave his life for that. The civilian gave his life for that. There are so many people who have sacrificed their own safety and their own freedom in order that we all together can live as a family under that banner. And so it means a lot more to me than just a, you know, just some stripes on the deal. Now, I don't want to go into all the history of what the flag it supposedly represents or doesn't represent. I'm just telling you from a person that was raised up to be, you know, basically a servant to the community and a patriot as far as, you know, I love my country. And you should love your country as well. And I love the fact that we still have, Russia still has their own flag, and you know, China still has their own flag, and America has their own flag, because just like the United States system of government, where there are checks and balances, there are separation of powers, you need those separate powers. You need Russia to be tough, you need China to be tough, you need America to be tough, and you need them to be respectful of one another so that there's always a checks and balance. You know, I would expect that if the United States of America started doing terrible atrocities throughout the entire land, and we can argue whether they do or don't already, I'm just saying. But if it came down to a point where American citizens were being completely brutalized by a tyrannical government, or the American government was out there tyrannically brutalizing everybody else in the world, I would expect the strongest powers of this world to come back here and say, look here, United States government, you need to get your act together, or else we're coming in and we're going to sort things out. And, you know, that would, in some people's eyes, be classified as treason. But truth and justice isn't, there ain't no border for truth and justice.
Let me say this about the American flag. I hold the American flag here. It's one of the 65 I hold. And believe me, if I met with a government official, that American flag will go up right beside mine. I'm looking at mine on the flag stand in my office right now. You know, I honor my nation too. The thing about it is, you know, that's the thing. We have these things, and I'm going to tell you what we do at our powwows. Actually, we invite the vets to come in and do a veterans dance with us, and we dance for our vets. And that's every war we've had, all the way back to World War II that I can remember. A lot of things what I do, even if I need another flag pole and a flag comes with it, the first thing I do is I grab, I look and see if I see a veteran out there, and I honor that vet and I give him that flag because I honor what he did. I am a Marine Corps brat myself.
Well, I come from a long line, a very long line of people who served in the military. And I recognize that in so many different portions of history, there were people of all nations that were serving in the military. People of all races and colors, and they weren't always treated equal either. But nonetheless, they still put their lives on the line in order to make what we're all enjoying right now possible. You see what I mean?
Well, you have to look at, you know, you got a statue of Iwo Jima where they're putting the flag up, right?
Yep.
They're not thinking about their Ira Hayes as far as he was from an Indian nation helping them put that flag up.
Yeah.
I
have to tell a story because what's coming to my mind is, well, first of all, I'm going to just throw this out. What are we enjoying to respond to you, Shaziz?
Let me say that.
Of the things we are enjoying, but I also know what is not enjoyable, and that's ramping up and the scene.
Let me rephrase that just a second.
Okay.
What we perceive to be enjoying freedom.
Go
ahead.
That's better. So this story, it's a short one, but, you know, my folks passed away about 12 years ago or more, and I had the job of cleaning out the house, you know, the family house. And So, you know, I had to get everything, all drawers were filled with the papers and information and boxes of stuff, and I had to go through everything. You know, it was not just go in there and bulldoze it all away, you know, because there was stuff there that was, like, important family history things, and I came across the letters, you know, my father was in World War II, I think I mentioned that, you know, he was in the Navy. And he told some stories about that, but he wrote a letter. I don't know who he was writing this letter to. Maybe it was just a record, but the letter. I'm gonna paraphrase it because I don't have it in front of me. But he wrote about how he fought in the war. Came and there were many people, all nations there, you know, he spoke about fighting this war, the Great War, they call it. I don't know how they can even title a war the Great War, because it's not great. I'm sorry, war is not great for anyone. So the Great War he fought in, but he told the story about when he came home here to the Hudson Valley, and he was approached by some local businessman who asked him if he would come, that he was being invited along with a lot of other people in the town here, men, to come to a meeting. I guess this turned out to be some kind of a clandestine meeting out on a back road here in the valley, you know. He named the road they were on, and it's quite a remote place, and he said all these community people were gathered there, he said, but they had like white sheets over their head, right? And he said they were asking all the people there in the community from this town here to sign pledges against the black people in the community. So I grew up here, of course, in this little town here, New Paltz, New York, it's called, in the Hudson Valley, and 1942, my father came back in 1945 from the war, and I guess my dad made me very proud of him. He was so appalled by what was going on in that clandestine meeting, and appalled and shocked, because he said those people, our neighbors, those black people, they fought with us in the war. They went to war with us. They were there side by side with us. And as you say, yes, they weren't treated equally, that's for sure. So he wrote this letter and described what happened that night, in a dark night on a back road here in this little village, this, you know, one of the hometowns here in America, Hudson Valley, New York State, and these people in sheets were asking all the people in that community, you know, to pledge against the people of the community who were black people, and how he was so appalled by that and outraged by that. Now he said these people, our neighbors, fought in this world war with us side by side, you know? I mean,
yeah, that's
just
Klanish.
What?
That's a little Ku Klux Klanish, if you know what I mean.
Well, it was, but I mean, he didn't use that word because he may not even have known, I don't know, he didn't mention that, but that's what it was, you're right. But I was very proud of my dad, you know. In my household, growing up, I never heard negative comments about anyone. Prejudice remarks, hate remarks, nothing. That's how I grew up. That just didn't even exist in my family. It was unheard of in my family.
Well, I can't say the same, because I've had some individuals in my family who I've basically had to set straight on a few occasions because of what they perceived to be as a joke. And to me, you know, it's not a joke. And there are people out there of all different backgrounds who have, you know, sacrificed, even though, like I said, the Indian nations of this world, they got every right in the world to be upset because of the way their ancestors were treated. The people of different races, same thing. But I also got to say that here we are in the here and now, and we have to come together and find a solution, because, you know, to throw the baby out with the bathwater because the you know, water's corrupted or whatever, then, you know, that to me don't seem very wise. And right now, until we build us up a new house, so to speak, we need to try to at least clean the house that we got or repair it or do the best that we can. And the only way that we're able to do that is when citizens and the executive, legislative, and the judicial branch of government figure out a common ground, such as like this round table, for example, where we come together and we set everything on the table and open up a dialogue. So right now, the failure to communicate is the biggest problem that we have, because the officers don't know. If they do know, they don't care about your rights. They don't want to hear you quoting the Constitution. And the judge, because of time or whatever, you know, the judge doesn't want to hear what you have to say. So myself going to court and wanting to say what I have to say, whether or not I could be not biased in a decision on something, I have to be honest. Because of my shaky faith in justice, I do come to court with a bias. And it's unfortunate, because I want to serve my community. I want to be, you know, the person that protects the, you know, and makes a fair decision to, you know, if we have to have things such as laws and courts and stuff like that, if we have to live under a governmental system, that I want to ensure that that process, that every bit of justice is equal all the way across the board. Does that make any sense?
Well, of course it does, but, you know, here's one incident, for instance, and I know that there are many. This just comes to my mind, is about Leonard Peltier. Leonard Peltier, you know, this
I'm
all occurred... Yeah, this all occurred at the Wounded Knee situation in the 70s, where the AIM people, American Indian Movement people, held the Wounded Knee site under their, which basically belongs to the people anyway, it's their land, you know, but according to the FBI, CIA, and all the other whatevers, they came in like they were going to war. I mean, it was unbelievable. So you have these men and women there who were standing up to help the people from a corrupt agent there on the reservation, Pine Ridge Reservation, who was basically murdering the people, the Indian people. He was himself that. Murdering people, controlling them, stealing, and so on. And these people had had enough. They couldn't even go out of their houses. You could see bullet holes and windows and doors and so on, just by these random guys who were under this sheriff's tutelage to just be in complete control and run the people, murder the people, and so on. And the people there on Pine Ridge called in AIM, American Indian Movement people, and they took over the Wounded Knee site there. You know, and so the government set in, because, you know, they had been tracking the American Indian Movement, because after all, it's a movement of American Indians, that this is not a good thing for the government, because these are, you know, what we could call them, they'd call them terrorists today, Homeland Security, you know. So these people were criminals, but yet they were protecting their own people. So they sent in tanks and helicopters and all kinds of weaponry that was like they were going to war. The same thing that happened at Standing Rock recently. That kind of weaponry, you know, attacking people with no guns, you know, peaceful people. So there was an incident that occurred. One of the FBI agents or so on, I think it was one or two, were shot. And Leonard Peltier and a couple of others were taken as the ones that they wanted to blame. And he's still in jail, by the way. It's so many years he's been there. And but you know what? There were documents that were not brought forth, were not allowed to have been brought forth by Leonard Peltier's lawyers. There was manipulations and various other things that happened, that there were documents that were not brought forth in that court and told to the jurors that would have basically exonerated
you
him.
You know, that is one of the biggest sticking points, what you just said right there, that there was documents and evidence that was not admitted.
Admitted.
That is where my main concern comes with the judicial branch of government. I feel that any evidence, regardless of how it was put out there, any evidence should be on the table in order for somebody to make an informed decision, because what we're talking about here is quite literally somebody's freedom.
And well, you know, this, you're talking justice there.
Yeah.
Okay, but justice was not served because there were things withheld purposefully, you know? This is what we're talking about. This is the corruption of, you know, of the system, that that documents that would prove someone's innocence are deliberately withheld.
Yeah. And
there were three people were charged with that, Leonard Peltier and
right.
two others. Leonard yeah. took off to Canada, and the other two were arrested, were brought in, and were released after trial. There was no jail, anything.
Yeah.
Leonard Peltier was in Canada and was given sanctuary. And the U.S. government and the FBI, through threats and intimidation, forced Canada to release Leonard Peltier back to the United States. The rifle that they said that Leonard Peltier used to shoot one FBI officer did not even function, nor was he in the area where the shooting actually occurred, and the officer, the FBI agents, could not even say in court that they could prove who fired the shot that killed the officer. So it was all a sham.
He was a sacrifice. That's what he was.
There's a couple comments in the chat room down there. May said that too many cops get off of murder with self-defense pleas. One guy was shot because he was deaf and his hands made the cop shoot. He felt threatened. Police have become taxpayer mercenaries. Some work through private security school. The Americas now in Switzerland moved in, changed names, privatization, many groups, ISS, ISIS. Is that what it said?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Let me go a little further with what they were talking about, Shaziz, real quick, and I'll hand it back to you.
All right.
Now, in the court with Leonard Peltier, it was proven, absolutely proven, that the bullets that killed these officers didn't come from that gun. Already proven. Completely. Now, I'm going to step away from that, and I'm going to mention a name, John T. Williams. Okay? John T. Williams was actually a deaf, he was a whittler, he was an artist, okay? In Seattle, Washington, and was crossing the street and was actually whittling on a piece of wood when he walked by, and he couldn't hear a thing. He was deaf, from my understanding. Seattle police officer got out of a car, told him to drop the weapon, which was, he was just working on something. Immediately shot the man, I think, six, seven times. And as they approached him, as he was dead on the street, one officer put his foot on the man's neck and said, if he moves again, shoot him.
Man.
So he was shot in the back. He didn't hear the man. Couldn't hear.
And
so basically, that's what's going on.
There's a video out there that really got me on my ear, because there were two people, and the story, short story of it was, supposedly they were in the room and maybe had a BB gun or maybe didn't have a BB gun, and they were waving it out the window or something like that. Nonetheless, so for some reason, these law enforcement officers got called to the deal. Well, when they came out of the room, because they didn't know that law enforcement ever even was called, when they came out of the room, it was a man and a woman, And they had no idea that the law enforcement were even there. And the next thing you know, there's an officer with an AR-14 or whatever you call them, AR-15. I don't know. Shoot, I don't
AR-15.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't keep up with it. But either way, it's an assault rifle. Same one that they're trying to ban. He's standing there holding this doggone thing, you know, and shouting and cussing at these people and telling them to get on the ground and barking out orders and all that kind of stuff. And at one point in the deal, flat out says, if you make one mistake, there's a very good chance you're going to get shot. You're going to die and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is going on here? Now, you could see these guys weren't wielding no weapons. They didn't appear to be, you know, a threat to anybody. They were just average Joes coming out of a doggone, apartment built or a motel room or whatever. And so, you know, they get them all down on the ground and they're telling them to crawl this way at them and all this kind of stuff. Well, it basically ends up, the officer ends up opening fire on this dude because he makes a mistake on how he's moving. You know, he's all baffled or, you know, the way that these orders are being shouted out, I couldn't even concentrate. What is it you want me to do? Personally, I wouldn't even have moved. I would have laid down on the ground right there and said, you know, if you're going to shoot me, you're going to shoot me, but ain't no way in heck I'm crawling towards you when you got a gun in your hand. But either way, as a former officer, I understand that anyone out there who was trained in law enforcement, there are other options in order to actually bring this person in without killing this person. And this officer shot this person. Basically, as far as I'm concerned, he murdered this person. All right, well, that's it, plain and simple. If they would have been real police officers, real peace officers, then they would have figured out a way to, even if it took them a day, to wear this person down. You know, you don't stand there and fire on somebody unless you physically see they're getting ready to open fire on you. There wasn't no threat for that officer's life. That officer was far enough back, had a assault rifle in his hand. There was no reason to pull that trigger other than the fact that the guy made a mistake and put his hand beside him or whatever. But had there been other officers around there or whatever that would say, you know, everybody, let's calm down, let's get this thing sorted out properly so everybody goes home alive, then that thing could have ended differently. But instead it ended with somebody's life getting taken.
Let's look at, if you look at the whole situation, there was, I remember seeing this. There was a young 12-year-old black child, I remember, he was actually playing. That's all he was doing, he was actually playing. It was a toy gun anyway, but he was playing. And two officers showed up and actually blew this poor child away. He was playing. He was 12.
Well, for all those gun control advocates out there, there's some serious things that you actually really need to contemplate on. First off, if you're so worried about guns and, you know, the dangers therein, then first off, what you need to do, and they did to some extent, they actually got where you actually had to put a little orange tip on a toy gun so that people would recognize it, but then they said that criminals would paint the tip of their gun orange so that they could...
Yeah,
well, that's regardless. You need to work on society itself and start teaching these children from a young age that guns are a serious deal. They're not toys. And if you're glorifying them as toys, you shouldn't be making toy guns. If you want to show people how serious that guns are, you've got toy guns out there, kids running around playing cops and robbers and shooting each other. So getting trained from a young age, and even to the extent that when you get into video games, you got first-person shooters where you're running around and shooting an animation of another individual. And even going even farther to the way that you're training law enforcement officers to shoot at a black silhouette as opposed to a target to desensitize them against shooting a human being. So yeah. If in society you're glorifying guns, and then now you're going to complain about guns, we need to ban all guns. Well, it doesn't work
question.
Out so well.
I got a question for all three of you on the panel. I actually wrote this in the chat once, but I'm gonna ask you, Cecil, since you are a vet and I do honor you. Thank you for your service. I got one question for you. In the Constitution, you have the Second Amendment right to bear arms, right?
Yep.
Okay, if we have that right in the Constitution, why do we need the NRA anyway?
Well, we don't. We shouldn't. The NRA just came about because people felt like the doggone rights was being treaded on. Because, like I said, when it comes to that second Constitution, I take words literally. And it says quite literally, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And if you take chop those words apart, put them however you want to look at them, the definition of it means that you get your rights. But nonetheless, it's not the NRA that we got to worry about. It's not the pro-guns or the lack of guns or whatever. We live in a society. I wish right now that we could live in a perfect utopia where everybody just put out all their weapons and we all go to a picnic together and get along. I wish that was the case. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. And so until we get to that point where people start recognizing that shooting each other ain't a good idea, then we need to be able to defend ourselves. And as the government is supposed to be there to represent the people, and their track record stinks, and then I mean stinks all the way back in history to the present, and seems to be getting worse, then we need to be able to have that check and balance, if you understand what I'm trying to say. It's the reason why we're not in the middle of a nuclear war, because Russia's got nukes, China's got nukes, India's got nukes, we all got nukes, and we all come to the common understanding that if we all start throwing these things around, humanity's got a serious issue at hand. And so that kind of keeps us at bay, you know, don't attack us because we'll nuke you.
It's like the American government going, you know, okay, we got the nuclear weapons, but we don't want nobody else to have them.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, too. Other nations out there don't have nuclear weapons, and it's discouraged that they get them. That wouldn't be any different than the government having guns and discouraging the people from having guns. If anybody's going to have a gun, everybody has to have a gun, because anybody could just get crazy and try to do something stupid to people.
So you got to look at my situation through my lifetime, my journey in this time. It's become a problem mentally. Sometimes with me when I was a kid, that if you wore a blue uniform and had a badge and a gun on you, you extremely paranoid me.
Well, brother, I'm right there with you, because I want to say something to people. When I mention I got to go to jury trial, I have to tell you, I'm physically ill over it. I'm actually concerned. I'm in fear of my own safety. Just to go to supposedly do my duty as a juror, and if I feel that apprehensive, like before I get to court, this is how my day is going to plan out. The night before I go to court, I'm not going to sleep, because I'm not going to be able to sleep. I'm going to be thinking about what I should say, what I shouldn't say. And when I finally get up in front of the building, I'm going to have to make sure I park somewhere where I'm not going to end up with a ticket because I parked somewhere I shouldn't have parked. And then I got to empty out all my pockets. And since I will wear steel-toed boots, I already know they're going to make me take my shoes off before I go through the metal detector. And so the only thing that I'm going to carry into that place is my identification, which I'm sure that somebody's going to ask me for at some point in time. And so I'm going to have to, you know, I would be better off in getting me one of those old, you know, robes, a Hare Krishna robes or something like that, and not carry anything in my pocket, keep my hands in the air, holding my ID, and walk through that metal detector in my sandals or flip-flops, which by the time I got on the other side, I probably wouldn't be dressed good enough for court, because even court says that they got some sort of, you know, way that you got to dress when you come to court. Otherwise, you're being disrespectful. You know, like take your hat off in court and all that, like they're better than you or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna say that, you know, I know with this whole gun thing and the recent shootings and so on and so forth that we're dealing with here, you know, I think that part of this is an agenda to really ultimately remove that right to bear arms.
And I believe you're right.
What?
I believe you're right.
And I know that people get all upset when you say, when you point out the reality of things, that studies have shown that all these shooters basically are on pharmaceuticals. They've been depressed, and so they're put on meds. Every one of them. You can do that research if you want. So when you write in a chat or whatever and say it's not, the guns are not the issue, because you could kill anybody anyway using anything if you want to. You know, people get all upset about that. And I think the reason is because what they're doing is they're now attacking, you know, or making it obvious that we need to have our guns confiscated because these are children. And this is pretty dirty, downright dirty, okay?
Yeah.
You know, so, and what I'm talking about here is an agenda, is a control factor here. You know, we've been doing research on these shootings, and when people call them red flags, it doesn't mean that there aren't deaths, because, you know, people aren't saying that, well, these children really weren't killed, you know. I mean, some of them maybe, but that's not where I'm standing. I feel that, you know, these are horrific, horrific, horrific things that we're dealing with this. And but I look at this one piece that, okay, now it's the children that are being targeted here, which is a crime in itself of them being targeted, but the ones who are creating this, you know, this situation, it's evil, okay? So I'm going to put that out. And we have seen, you know, various things throughout the world and the country where if people want to kill somebody and they don't have a gun, they'll figure it out some way. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make the loss of these lives any less. I'm not saying that.
No.
But looking at the bigger picture here about the martial law, because this is what I feel is where they're moving us toward, is they want to put the martial law out here so that all the citizens here of this country are completely helpless, where they can't defend themselves. And you could do the history about which countries did that too.
Yeah.
Germany did that, China did that, and then they proceeded to, you know, just slaughter their own citizens and so on. So the people couldn't defend themselves,
well,
you know?
That's a big key right there. You know, let's just say hypothetically, all these shootings, and if they are false flags, that they actually do their job and they tear at the heartstrings of even the most advocate gun owners. And basically everybody says, you know what, it's about time we all put our guns down and get rid of them all. And the only ones that can have guns will be the military and the law enforcement. Well, once again, you just mentioned two particular incidents where that pretty much went down, and it didn't go, to this very day, doesn't fare well for those that are citizens.
So, well, you can't protect yourself with a very well with a pitchfork,
yeah,
or a hoe or a log or a stick or a stone against the military or the mercenaries. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
But to me, I don't agree with these, I guess they're called AK something or others, I don't know. If you're a hunter, or if you want to defend your family against, you know, robbers or violence or whatever, you want to protect yourself, and you know, there are certain weapons, you know, yeah, that you can use. I don't think anybody needs an AK, ultra, whatever the hell it is, excuse me, whatever the heck it is, to go hunting.
What?
I just don't, I, so we
here's
have
the
to
thing, here's the thing, the Constitution never said that you can bear arms so you can go hunting. The
That's
Constitution
true.
Said that your right to bear arms cannot be infringed upon.
Yeah.
And we can't pick and choose how we want to interpret what is written in the Constitution. And the gun is not the problem. You can have a frickin' Gatling gun hooked to the back of your truck, but that Gatling gun is going to sit there and rust before it will shoot itself.
Yeah.
It's never been a problem of what kind of gun you have. I know people that live less than 8 miles from me who have a frickin' cannon. that they shoot off every once in a while. In fact, the last time they shot it, the fire department come out.
The Second Amendment.
We're talking about the Second Amendment. It's about protecting the right to bear arms and empower the people to serve as the Republican alternative for civil defense.
But we got to put it in
the militia.
We got to put it in perspective.
It says the right of the people shall not infringe.
Okay.
Not the militia.
No. It says empower the people.
Hold on, folks. The actual phrasing is a well-regulated militia necessary to secure a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And for those folks that aren't understanding what the militia is actually the last line of self-defense. It's every able-bodied man, woman, and if necessary, child is the militia. You, the people, are the militia. And that was actually, like Patty mentioned, is set there in place not for hunting purposes, but in case their government ever got out of control. The right of the people to overthrow that government and put in place a new form of government. That's what its purpose is.
Yeah.
And so,
what I'm saying, so now we're in a position where we see something rising here, where we see something going on, that of course the Founding Fathers may not have realized was coming. I don't know, but although we can read, speeches or information by some of the past presidents, especially Kennedy, who spoke about the government, and that the corruptness of the government and so on. But we're in a position now where we're looking at these incidences here, and there's something, when people call it a false flag, and I want to emphasize again, doesn't mean that there are no lives taken. What it means is that it's a setup for a purpose, okay? There's something behind this incident, and we call it a false flag, and that's how I would describe it anyway. Maybe you guys have a different perspective, I don't know. But we're looking at this recent shooter situation in Florida, that young man named Cruz. He was displaying all the signs that should have alerted people, and this goes on over and over again, about these certain behavioral displays that these people show, and nobody paid attention. Nobody got it, and then you have
even after the FBI was told,
even
pointed to the name on the he used his own name, easy to trace, had so many calls to the FBI headquarters 2 weeks before that shooting took place. His distant relative called to the FBI to tell them that he is going to shoot somebody. Sorry, Bob.
No, that's okay, because that's you're right. And even the young people, the school children, knew. They said, this is the guy who's going to come to school and shoot everybody. They knew it. And there were so many signs. He was thrown out of that school. He was banned from the school. He carried bullets and stuff in his backpack. He threatened people. He was a problem. He was a troublemaker. There were 50-some calls to the police to come to the family's house. Well, but nothing was ever reported or done with this young man. He was in psychotherapy. That's a key right there. Obviously, when you go into psychotherapy, most often, if not every time, they give you drugs. Okay, whether you have depression, whatever it is, paranoia, whatever the story is, the boy is on pharmaceuticals. Now, then there's the FBI mess up, which is not a mess up. They knew what they were doing, in my estimation. I'm going to say that. We've looked into that. It looks pretty typical. There's a lot of signs here in these incidents, these shooter incidences, that are really alarming. And they're across the board. But nobody who's screaming about take the guns, are seeing this. They're just pushed into hysteria, and I can understand why. This is a horrible thing. It's very real when you have these, but there's a manipulation going on here that people need to be aware of, and I think the ultimate goal is to completely eliminate our ability to protect ourselves from any corruption of the government or bad things happening, as you say, that's what the Constitution stood for, that we need to be able to bear arms and protect ourselves. And that's what that amendment is about, period. That's what I feel.
Well, the thing is, folks, there's some issues that need to be resolved if you ever get away from a corrupt government. The very first and most important issue of all would be to protect those rights at every possible turn. Because once they're gone, they're gone. You ain't getting them back. But the biggest issue that comes next in this line of deal is you've got to get the money out of government. You got to, you see, right now the Congress has the power of the purse, so Congress is the one you should be focusing on. And you should tell them, you know, that you don't want them spending money unless the people approve of where the money's actually going. But when you send a senator or a congressman or even a president up there to stand for office, yeah, you need to know. I mean, know who that person is before you put them in office. You need to know their history about that thing. And right now, there are ways by which the media can manipulate any candidate as far as, you know, making them look bad or good or anything like that. So we're at the burden of the media. So media also needs to be held accountable and criminally liable for any lies that they tell to the people to steer an election one way or another. But the fact that a senator or congressman or any representative for that matter can be bribed by special interest groups, or they have to have thousands of dollars to run a candidate, or even the value of their service to the community. You know, if you see this, the Congress pay or whatever is only so much amount, and then this turkey gets in office and suddenly he's rich, well, there's a problem there. And so as long as there is money available and power comes with that money, you're going to have special interest groups, and not excluding anything like mobs and mafias and, you know, criminal organizations that are going to have their hands in the cookie jar, if you understand what I'm saying. And so it needs to be that if you're holding an office in the executive branch or the legislative branch or the judicial branch, you should be held at such incredibly high standards that so much as violating your oath of office could be considered to be treason, and you would get the worst case scenario. Until that comes about, until you get the money out of the system is going to be corrupt. And unless you get good people elected into those positions of what is perceived to be power, and they know the how serious this issue is, then that American dream and that Constitution is just that. It's just a dream. Until you got it to where these people can't go to Congress and the Senate and get these people off the side and bribe them or blackmail them or whatever, it needs to be, if there's anything higher than a federal offense, it needs to be a complete and utter act of treason to interfere with a senator or congressman and offer them money or something to that extent. Because what you got going on is you got senators and congressmen in there that maybe have good intentions when they start, but by the time they get into that seat of power, they've already been manipulated, they've already been bribed, they've already been blackmailed, threatened, or whatever, in order to further somebody else's agenda. And when you got groups like the FBI and the CIA running around with unchecked power, you can watch an FBI agent treat a citizen as if the citizen isn't nothing more than trash. They will quite literally do that. They don't care about your constitutional rights. They use things like the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, and all these laws passed in from all the way back to possibly even before 9/11, through 9/11, through every single one of these supposed mass shootings that's gone on out there. And the ultimate agenda falls down to whatever the corporations of this world want to have happen. You want to make sure that nobody can fight you if you decide you want to take their money and rip them off. Right now, our money's backed by nothing. It's a petrol dollar is what they call it. And so one day the gas could be this price, the next day could be that price, and the next day your money's completely worthless and you can't even get no fuel in your vehicle or whatever.
Any money is worthless.
Yeah, but that money comes with a price. And the price isn't just the value of the money itself or the degradation of your, I can't even say the word, the degrading of your rights. It also comes with a price that dang money, it means nothing. It could be taken away from you instantaneously, and people are willing to kill for it. People are willing to lie and steal for it. They perjure themselves in court. They will actually violate their oath of office, and in order to keep their job, they will follow, just like back in the old Nazi regime when they knew that this was wrong. Their words were, "I was just following orders." No, you were committing a crime. You were committing murder. You were committing genocide. You were violating your oath of office. You were violating the law. You were violating the people. And there's where the problem lies. They'll do anything.
You're right. You're absolutely right. They'll do anything under the money, under the green piece of paper with George W. Bush's mama on it. I'm just saying. This is, now, since I've been on radio with you, Shaziz, let me explain something to you. I've never said anything about what the president has said other than what I've heard from his own mouth, okay? But here's what I'm saying. Everything you know about me, bruh, everything you know about what I'm up to and what I'm trying to do for people around the world, and we're all related, we're brothers and sisters, we shouldn't be fighting in the first place, right?
That's right.
I have actually been told that I am more dangerous right now than I have ever been in my whole lifetime.
Well, I believe it. Brother, I believe it. Because all of us sitting here on the deal, if that First Amendment wasn't available to us, if the Second Amendment wasn't available to us, you think that you and I would get by with speaking the way that we're speaking right now?
I know, but when has peace become that bad that I become violent for speaking for it?
That's the thing. That's the thing right there. And we're sitting here, we're advocating peace. We're not advocating overthrows of any governments. We're advocating that people get educated and they open up a dialogue of communication with their representatives. If they're displeased with the system, then they need to help repair the system by being proactive, and that's what we're saying. But
brother, I'm saying that people have actually told me face to face that as far as myself is concerned, I'm extremely dangerous.
But if you're dangerous, Two Dog, you're only dangerous to their agenda. That's the key.
Well, we're all dangerous to their agenda.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Every one of us is dangerous to their agenda. So it's not just one person to be. It's all of us are dangerous to their agenda. This is why we all have to wake up to that fact. That it's you and me and Two Dog and Patty and whomever else, all you people out there listening, we're all the dangerous ones to their agenda.
But
I'm just saying for peace, and I do everything in a peaceful way. I sit with people from around the world lately.
Yeah.
And if talking, you know, with people and love, honor, and respecting people, if that's dangerous, then that's just exactly what I am.
It's what we want, but it's dangerous to their agenda. See, they don't want peace. If they wanted peace, then they would sit down at the table with the citizens and they'd say, look, you know, we understand you guys don't trust us anymore. We're upset. You're upset. Everything's dangerous around here. We're the four of us right here, and even the people in the chat room, are essentially trying to be like advocates between two separate entities, one being the people and one being the representation. And so we're sitting here trying to peacefully put out a resolution for, you know, both sides can balance those scales of justice and keep the dream going and work our way towards a better world. But this isn't what we're actually seeing out there in the courtrooms, because judge don't want to hear what you have to say about peace and the Constitution. The attorneys, prosecuting attorney, even defense attorney, and the executive branch, being the police officers and stuff like that, they don't want to hear it. They got.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to, you know, I'm just curious to when do you guys think that this country turned away from the Constitution and the people? When do you think that happened?
Well, I think most part it started as far as, you know, really heavy duty back during the deal when the Federal Reserve got switched over to private hands, because now...
That was 1913.
Yeah, that's...
Wasn't
when,
it?
It's somewhere around about, but 1913 or 30s or 20s or somewhere around, I can't even remember the actual date, but it's we could find it if we need to. But when it did that, it put so much power into the banking system that it basically got to the point where even senators and Congress and even the president, as far as that matter, basically just becomes ceremonial to appease the people, when in fact the almighty dollar rules the courtroom. The almighty dollar is turning what would have normally been a peace officer into an armed revenue generator for the state, essentially a mercenary paid for by the taxpayers. And the taxpayers, when they're looking out there and they know they live in a country because they could see the flag up there, they've been told about the Constitution, never really been educated to the full extent, except for back in our day, we used to have to pass a test to understand and know the Constitution before we could actually even graduate. Nowadays, they don't have that standard anymore. And you can ask any person around 16 to 18 years old, maybe even 20 years old, questions about their rights and the Constitution. They might be able to quote out the most popular ones, but they have no idea what the rest of them are. Very few people could even tell you what the Third Amendment to the Constitution means about, you know, not during peacetime that no military shall be quartered in somebody's house.
Right,
yeah.
No standing army. Nobody can come in and say, get out of your house.
Yeah.
Without it.
So that means your house don't become Motel 6 for all any military guy that decides he wants to stay in your house. You know, you have the right to your own property and privacy and so on down the line. But people don't, that's not something that's spoke about very often, so people don't understand what it means. But that's the whole key. If you don't know your rights, you're going to give them up before you even know you even had them.
Well, see, this is what I want to get at, though, is that if we look at the history of this country under the Constitution and the forming of the Constitution, then we know that when the Constitution was formed, it was not done by just people who came together. It was done by Masons, Freemasons.
Yep.
The Constitution was put together by Freemasons. So, if we know this from the very get-go, then there's never been a point in time. I used to say it all the time, Constitution is pretty words on paper, but it doesn't pan out. And that's why, because we've never truly been able to exercise our rights as people according to the Constitution. They've led us along and let us think, but ever since the Constitution has been written and put into effect, they have been changing incrementally throughout. And so we got to look at this in the reality that it is this government that we are under, this government that was formed, was never formed for us. They said it was. It looked good.
Well,
but like everything else, it was used to get us from point A to point B in the most expedient and easy manner. And here we are today looking at the same thing, the same ruling class the same types of systems being set up, and we've got to look a little bit deeper into this and say, wait a minute. So if this Republican government did not work, if it was co-opted and became a democracy, which was co-opted and became a corporatist government, and if all the other governments of the world are doing the same, and the people are the ones who are bearing the brunt of all of this, then maybe it's time for us to start thinking that maybe none of these governments work for us, and maybe we shouldn't even be trying to prop them up. Maybe we shouldn't even be trying to change what can't be changed. Maybe we need to start creating the people.
Well,
you know
what I see.
Just saying.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. But what I'm saying is that, you know, if I sign my name on a contract with any individual, especially in the corporate world, and I don't fulfill that contract, I could be sued for breach of contract. You know,
in a sovereign's world, that's the same difference.
Yeah,
well, in a sovereign's world outside of government. That is the way it goes.
As far as I'm concerned, that Constitution is still a valid contract between the government and the people, and it needs to be protected until there's a system where, you know, we can make it better, if you understand what I'm saying. Because
I want Two Dog to tell us the truth about governments. And he's always said it, and I've always echoed his sentiment. When you're talking about government, tell us, Two Dog, about the snake.
Let me go this way. I'm going to say it this way, and if you want me to, I could say the whole story. But is that what you want?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, there's a story, an old Indian story. And there was this young man, he was looking for a vision. And he went to the medicine man, and they went into the Anipi. They smoked the pipe, and they prayed. And they prayed, and they prayed, and he sweat. And then when they come out, the medicine man looked at the young man and said, where do you wish to seek your vision? And he pointed at the mountain. And the medicine man said, go, seek your vision. So the young man went, and he started up the mountain, and as he started up the mountain, he looked down, and there was a snake. And the snake looked at the young man, and he spoke to the man, and he said, pick me up, for I'm cold. Take me down the mountain, place me on a rock. I wish to warm myself. The young man saw to himself and said, oh, but no. You are a snake, and I know you will bite me. So he sidestepped the snake, and he moved on. Farther up the mountain he went. He looked back down, and there was the same snake. And the snake spoke again and said, please, pick me up, for I am cold. Take me down the mountain. I promise I won't bite you. Place me on a rock. Let me warm myself. And the young man thought again, said, ah, but I know you. So he sidestepped the snake again. And he went way further upon the mountain where he was going to do his vision. And he looked back down, and lo and behold, it was the same snake. And this snake spoke again, said, please, I promise you, pick me up, pack me down the mountain and place me on a rock. And I promise you, I swear to you, I won't bite you. So the young man thought real quick, curled his arm and bent down and picked up the snake and packed the snake down the mountain and placed the snake upon the rock. And as soon as he put him on that rock, hit him. Moral of the story is what we have today. It was yesterday's moral, but it becomes today's moral, okay? You have a Democratic Party, you have a Republican Party, okay? A snake can be nothing but a snake.
Yep.
It can't be anything else. and what we have in both parties, they're both snakes. They can't be trusted.
You know, and as much as I like to say I have faith in humanity, I've watched a lot of videos here recently just for interest. There was a lot of videos about, they call them bait bikes or bait pranks or whatever. They'll put a bike up against a tree and they'll actually tie a rope to the back of the bike, and people, they'll sit back and videotape as people come along and steal that bike. Of course, obviously, if it's got a rope tied to it, you know how it's going to end up. But nonetheless, as a social experiment, and watching how many of average Joe would quite literally take something that isn't theirs and just kind of steal it, it kind of makes you concerned about government, the way that government is formed, is that these are people in uniform. All right, these are people. And if a whole lot of the average Joes would steal, then what's to make it any different because a man or a woman has a uniform or a title, so to speak? And so that's why I think something like term limits in Congress and the Senate, it would be important that you limit how long somebody could actually be there. No lifetime senators or congressmen, no lifetime judges. That should be something that should be addressed by the people to the system to try to change things around. But at that, you're also going to have some sort of standard where you hold anybody who holds office at a higher accountability, because as your story explained right there, a snake can't be nothing more than a snake. And if the average Joe's willing to steal from the average Joe, then what's going to change whenever they go to Congress or the Senate? Are they going to turn over a new leaf? I say that our problem isn't necessarily our government per se. It's more of a societal kind of thing, the way that we allow certain standards to just kind of slide by, the way that people are educated, the way that people are allowed to manipulate history or education for that matter, special interest organizations able to lobby or donate or bribe to the situation. In its basic sense, if we had a representative republic like this nation was set up to be, and everyone there was there for honorable intentions, and they were there to truly represent the people and not for any biased agenda one way or another, then the system would work. It's not it's like even communism sounds good on the surface. Everybody's equal. We're all going to have the same amount of money. We're all going to have the same amount of job. Everybody's going to be provided for. But then you have this dictator at the top of the deal that tells you everybody what they can and can't do. And you got a government that sets the rules of who can say what and who can do what. And there's no freedom involved in it. And by the time it gets corrupted, then suddenly... the system is just completely and utterly out of hand. And even with a representative republic, you still run that risk of having a tyrannical government because that it's actual people that are sitting in those seats. And most generally, it's not the poor people. It's the people who somehow or another were able to amass wealth, and they were able to afford a campaign and commercials and that kind of stuff. So you got to take money out of the situation.
Let me roll with you on that for a second, and I'm not just going to roll with you with that, but there's a little bit of history. There's a whole lot of history, let's put it this way, about the American Constitution that a lot of people absolutely don't know. And this is back before, actually a few years before America actually got its freedom, so to speak. Okay? I'm going back to 1754. In 1754, Ben Franklin actually spoke. And he said he went and sat with the Iroquois Confederacy. And he said they had a constitution, and the Iroquois Confederacy Constitution. He said if a nation of savages can have almost a perfect constitution, we can do better. That is, quote, Ben Franklin. I don't see that you did yet.
I see exactly what you're saying, and I agree, because I've actually listened to how your nation's structured, where you got clan mothers and you got a chief, and how the clan mothers, if they think the chief is not doing the job as it was prescribed, or respectful or honorably, then they actually have the power to say, you're out of here, and we're putting somebody in who's going to do the job for the people. See, that's what I understand by that.
They are not savages.
Yeah.
The reason they were called savages is because they were not Christian.
I'm just saying that was the words of Ben Franklin.
I know that, but I'm just saying, if these savages can do it, we have to be better than them. But the reason they were called savages was because they were not Christianized, and they were not savages. We were not savages. Our people were not savages. We were people who honored the way of the Creator's law of one.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I liked about the way that Two Dog explained that, because it basically puts the savages clear on out the door, because you guys had a situation where you not only worked with each other, but you worked with the land and respectful to one another, and had a peaceful civilization. So,
well, you had one important piece. Again, now I have to keep reiterating this, is the clan mother system, yes, because the women were revered, respected. They were part of all decisions made. They instilled the chiefs or removed the chiefs if they weren't working in an honorable way for all the people. Well, the European women came here, couldn't vote, couldn't get an education, couldn't own land. They, basically were enslaved. They were, like women in slaves in pretty dresses, I call them. Now, I'd say that's pretty savagery right there, savagery against women. Whereas in the people here on Turtle Island, respected their women, and honored the women and the sacred feminine, and together men and women walked side by side in harmony and balance. They were in that state of reciprocity. You didn't find that in the European nations at all.
Yep, and the way that the whole history came down, were pretty much, another group came over and pretty much forced their will and people off of land that they'd been on for so many generations. In my views, completely and utterly shameful. It's I ain't got no words strong enough to say it without going over the top, if you understand what I'm trying to say. But right now, we don't live in a perfect world. And so those rights that we're told that we're supposedly have, even if it seems to be that it's only what we believe we have, the only ones in this world that can do anything about it is we the people. And that's by what we're doing right here. We got a round table where we're able to bring two separate faiths to a table, and we're sitting there talking about things from both sides of the fence. Nobody's getting upset at each other. Nobody's getting violent. We're peacefully seeking solutions and resolutions, and that is what needs to be done. I mean, you can't just go sit down in Congress and join in on their meetings. It's not like a city council where you got a big old audience and the people have a voice and stuff like that. I don't feel like I have a voice. If I go to court as a supposed juror and I try to voice my opinions, I'm going to get shut down. If I'm anywhere outside of their way of doing things. There are rules in court, which I don't know there are rules in court enough to be able to know what to do or what not to do. And I actually go to, court fearful of the court, fearful of the government. Then to me, it speaks of tyranny already. If I'm, as a citizen, afraid of my own judicial and legislative or judicial and executive branch of government for fear of retribution for exercising my First Amendment and my beliefs on what, I believe that I'm there for and under the questionable circumstances that I feel like I was summoned to court, that's why the people don't trust the government, folks. And in order for you to be able to make a remedy for all, there's going to have to come a time before all heck breaks loose that people sit down with these supposed representatives and get the facts straight. Are we going to recognize the Constitution as our supreme law of the land, or are you just going to leave that up there for me to believe that I got a choice and do as you will to me and the people? You see where I'm trying to go with that?
Yes, because if you look at government actually tells you have a choice. You have Democrat, we got Republican, okay? When actuality, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because if you stop and think about it, you have a man that is running for office, say the presidency of the United States, right?
Yep.
And on the private jet that he has, he actually has a golden toilet on his private jet. And he's saying he cares about the poor people.
Well, there's another thing right there. The hypocrisy of the whole entire deal is that these individuals, they live like kings and queens. I mean, we treat our senators and congressmen like celebrities. And that shouldn't be the case.
Well, there's the whole point right there. It's not just one man. It's them all in those elite positions are the wealthiest people. And they all have their treasures, They all hold them very close and very dear. They don't share very much. They don't really care about us, the common people, if you want to call us common, which I don't believe we are. We are the true people of the earth. And I'm going to say that... the world is perfect. It's the people who are imperfect, who have been corrupted and confused and denied, their truths.
Yep.
So, that's the whole point of where we are today, is that it's not just one person, one president. It's like this world circumstance here of the elite, high up on the ladders there, or up on the high of the pyramid, with everyone else, I call us, we're still the serfs doing the dirty work for the kings and queens. And the kings and queens are your political people, the presidents, the vice presidents, and all those in charge or in authority who claim they know it all and who tell us they'll take care of us and know us all, know it all. But this is the system. So the world herself, she is perfect. There is perfection here. It's the people who have been lost and dragged down rabbit holes and thrown over cliffs, and basically, we call them sheeple today. I suppose we have to stop calling our brothers and sisters sheeple or away, dumbed down or, not awake, or because therefore the grace of God go I.
Here's the deal. We cannot sit here and say, okay, let's get politically correct about how we talk and how we, there are people that are asleep.
I didn't finish. I'm saying that's the truth. There are people who are not awake. They may never wake up. We do our best to give the people the truth and to bring them through that, that dark place or unknown, wherever they are. We try to help them that way, but I think in reality, I come to the realization that all that I can do is speak what I believe is the truth to help people. I can't drag people into the light. I can't drag or push or force. I can only give what I feel to the people. I'm just talking about, when we call people names, it's judgmental.
Yeah.
You know, So somewhere in there, one of the commandments is do not judge others. Or I want to say, what's that thing they say, the people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones?
Yeah.
We see a lot of that today, right?
We've always had a lot of that. But when you see, this is the thing that you take power away from people and their own independence. Words are words to me, have always been just words. You can call me whatever you want to call me, but I don't care. Because I know who I am.
I know who I am.
But this is what I'm saying. I don't want anybody telling me, Patty, you can't say that word.
Absolutely.
Patty, you can't opinion this way. You can't opine. That's not a judgment I'm making when I'm saying this person is asleep because they're not aware of what's going on. To me, that is my truth. And changing that word and saying, oh, it's just another individual who doesn't know.
Asleep, to say someone is asleep is a different thing than calling them, you know, like a dummy or an idiot or
I will say they're dumbed down because they have been dumbed down.
Well, yes,
I'm not calling them a dummy. I'm saying they've been dumbed down.
Yes, I agree with you. But I'm also saying words are power. And if we want to help people, I'm just saying, how can we help people instead of calling them certain kinds of names? It's true that people are not awake.
That's not
a harmful thing to say. I'm just trying to finish my point.
Hey, I've been guilty, and I apologize because I've said things in the past, you know, such as people believing in global warming and calling them idiots. I shouldn't have said that. I mean, I apologize for that, and I'll try to not say that kind of things in the future. But I do get kind of frustrated at the situation because it seems like the enemy has had so many years, so many generations to divide we the people amongst each other, against each other, under labels and, you know, terminology and all that kind of stuff. And when it comes down to it, the ultimate power structure out there is essentially the government against the people. It's the people against the people. You go to government, and if you don't have the right words to say, there are people being arrested in different places like the Europe and the UK for saying things that are politically incorrect. They don't have the freedom to speak out, you know. If it's perceived to be a hateful, what they classify as hate speech, which I hate every speech. It just drives me nuts. Unless somebody's paying attention to it, it's just a speech.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to get these people out here, the average Joe, our brothers and sisters, to pay attention to what it means to be free. You know, to be able to have faith in justice, you got to first know what the heck justice is. And if you're out there fighting each other and arguing and cussing over each other, it doesn't matter that you don't like it that I'm a Christian. You know, I'm not asking you to follow me. I'm not telling you that you got to believe my way or it's either my way or the highway. It's just my walk in life. And as far as my views on, you know, whether Democrats or Republicans are the same side or say different sides of the same coin, or, you know, whether or not our government's corrupt, or whether I personally don't trust our executive branch, the law enforcement, because of what I've witnessed throughout my life, those are just my views of what I've seen. And unless I can express them without fear of, assault or retaliation or, you know, being shunned by the community, oh, you don't trust the cops, you're just a cop hater, you know. He just threw another label out there, another one for everybody to be called who disagrees with the government. The whole purpose of the First Amendment of the Constitution was to give you the power to disagree with the government. And when the First Amendment's gone, you ain't getting it back. When the Second Amendment's gone, you ain't getting it back. And if the people, we the people, are essentially the government, and you can't even disagree with your own fellow brothers and sisters on something, you ain't got no freedom. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. No, you're not wrong.
And you know, the way I feel about it is I'm no different from anybody else. I I expect to, and I will give others the same as I expect, you know. And if you are an idiot, I'm probably going to call you one.
Yeah.
If you take me to that point.
Yeah,
I mean,
like one.
Right. And I don't, you know, this thing about having to be politically correct and you got to watch these people's feelings, that's what got us in trouble in the first place.
Yeah.
Is people started worrying about how other people are going to think. And oh, well, I can't rise up and speak my mind because these people are going to get upset with me. They don't want me to say that, so I've got to be quiet. I will not be quiet. I'm never going to be quiet. I've never been quiet, you know? And I think it's a total injustice to say to people, there are certain words that are acceptable for you, but there are certain words that we will not allow you to do.
Yep.
You cannot speak these words.
As far as I'm concerned, you and myself and Two Dog and Barbara and, you know, people that join this night's round table are the voice of justice. Because what you're saying right there, it speaks volumes for, you know, actually just being able to be you, to say what you need to say to try to make this world better. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and we can't be afraid to do that.
No.
I can say it like this, you know. I have been speaking exactly for peace and everything else truthfully since I was 4 years old.
Yep. And I'm,
okay, I've been talking this for 54 years.
And I'm glad you have. And I'm glad that Patty will not shut up. I'm glad that she will not give up the right to speak her truth. And that's
now,
what it needs to be. That's the voice of justice.
Let me explain this. I was born in the year when the moon when the pony shed, and that's in May, okay? And in the last year of the 50s, okay, 1959. And let me say how I actually grew up hearing. And this is from people, all people, I don't care. All right? This is how I grew up hearing in the United States. You had your wet back, you had your chink, you had your red N-word, you had your N-word. Okay? That's what they kept doing. Me, I've been called a red N-word since the day I was born. Okay? Now, here's where the power to be, you know, the power of people come to pass here. And here's how people wake up. The blessing that I've got in my life is who have called me the red N-word, okay? My daughter was born and she hasn't heard that in her life, in, you know, being called that. So there is a step up and a blessing in itself, see?
Yep.
But that's what I heard constantly was, he's an inner, you know, and that is a, you know, because he's Mexican or whatever. Dude, we're all human being here.
Yeah, and it's a shame that other human beings want to label each other by their differences or their beliefs and such, and it's a sad world that, you know, people have actually had to, even to this day, probably a lot more than people realize that have been treated that way. And if we're ever going to find true justice, and I mean true justice, I mean where everybody's treated fairly and equally, you know, under the law, under each other's eyes and such, you know, I would like to see a colorblind society where we don't recognize any differences with each other. If we do notice a difference, that we don't, you know, hold any kind of differences against anybody. You know, I believe in the perfect world.
If the media and the government didn't constantly push that narrative,
right there,
we wouldn't have it.
That's it. Tell the world what you think about that, because I know you got something on you. You know?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Louisiana, and people heard me talk about it before. This is one of the most corrupt states that there ever was, still is. And there's a lot of, was, when I was growing up, a lot of racial tension. All manifested mm-hmm. by the state. By the state. And this is because I was in between. I was in between the whites and I was in between the blacks because I wasn't either one. You know, I was a little bit of everything, I guess. And I got along with both sides. I never knew the racism. I never knew the people that I knew in my family. We lived in the same areas in the swamp with whites and blacks and Indians. We all lived together. We weren't racial with each other. But when you went into the inner cities, into New Orleans and places like that, there was plenty of it. But it was manufactured. Mm. It was manufactured by the state, by the laws that they put against the blacks while they supported the whites. They initiated and instituted this racism, and they played it up constantly. And this is the way it's always gone.
If the media's out there portraying injustice to inform the people that there's an injustice going on, that's one thing. But if you're constantly being bombarded with, a perceived injustice on one person or one race or whatever, and it's a constant grind on these people, I can only visualize, I can only imagine what other races think of me just because of the color of my skin. And I'm like, I could sit down with anybody as long as they act as a person and a people or whatever, an honest human and respectful to me, and I'm respectful to them. I can sit down with anybody and live with them as if they were my family. But for me to even have the thought in the back of my mind that I'm afraid to go in public in certain areas of the community because it's predominantly blacks or predominantly a different color than I am, and I feel what they're going to think about me might not be good. You see what I'm saying? And that's the kind of mentality. If a guy like me who's peace-loving feels that way, that I'm not even secure to go walk down into this particular area because of the way I might be perceived by these people. I have to tell you, folks, there was a time in my life, quite literally, where I lived in what they classify as the projects. And I lived around a lot of people. 90% of the people around me were of a different color than I was. Right? And we treated each other wonderful. But even in that circumstance, I was fearful to just wander around in these projects to go around to other people who had been basically told by their mothers and fathers that you can't trust these people here because of the color and the history and all that kind of stuff. And so I had to walk around like I was walking on eggshells, which shouldn't have been the case. This should have been, as long as I didn't harm those people, as long as I was respectful to them and they could be respectful to me, I had to watch my terminology. I had to watch my actions because I'm actually in a different culture. And people on my culture would act a little bit different than people of their culture. And I could offend them. And so I had to be really careful about what I said and how I said it. Even to the extent of looking somebody in the eye could be offensive. And how our society got to that point, to where just because of the color of your skin, you got to be afraid to be yourself. I know it's a long history, and I know why these things are going down. But for us to allow our media to divide us continuously, and our governments to divide us continuously via class or color or belief system. They ask you on applications what race you are, or any kind of court document, or if you get pulled over by the law enforcement, they'll write down what race you are. I'm going to ask a question. What does it matter what race I am? If I was speeding, I was speeding as a person. Alright? If I committed a crime, I was committing a crime as a person. My color shouldn't have anything to do with it, any bearing on the case whatsoever, so why is it even on our legal documents?
Well, what I've seen actually, this is true, Shaziz. I'm going with you. I actually was told to put my rates down, of course, and you know, when I went to a doctor, for God's sake, why I don't know. But it had you either white, black, Asian, Mexican. But when it came to us,
or other,
it came to us. As Indian people, we had to put other.
I'd have to put
what
other.
What is an other?
Two dog, I'd have to put other too. Otherwise, I'd be committing perjury because I don't know what my true race is. I know that I've been told that I'm French Canadian / Cherokee, and so, you know, that covers my my mom's side and my grandfather's side.
That'd be mulatto, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I have no idea. You know, where am I supposed to stand in the upcoming race wars? Whose side am I supposed to be on? You know, I want to be on the side of peace. Who's on the side of peace? Who's on the side of brotherhood and getting along? You know,
let me go further with this. What I'm saying, which I go to a doctor, they can't even pronounce my name. They'll point at me and say you, because they can't pronounce my name.
Man.
That's serious. I'm serious about that. I even write it down. They go, well, we can't pronounce your name but you. And you're going to shoot me up with something, with a word as long as my arm, and you can pronounce that.
Yeah.
But here's the situation. I was asked one Native American month we had here to go speak in a church. I actually was asked, and I was so humbly honored to do so. So I went to go speak in it, and the preacher actually said, this church is open to all people of Jesus Christ and God's world. So I'm looking around, right? Okay, you got the white people over here, and you got the Indians standing here talking. But I asked them, you know, where are the black Christians at? Where are the black sisters at? And you will not believe the response. Oh, they got their own church over in Inwood town.
Oh, I would have walked out of that church so fast with the rage of... you wouldn't believe how fast I'd be up out
of
there.
Well, I got news for you. I didn't hang there any longer than, you know, till I could get to the freaking door. But what I'm saying is, this is how people have been separated.
Well, anytime, and this is one of the things that I guess it makes it so hard for me to tell people that I consider myself a Christian, and then I also have to go into the explanation of why. But under the guise of every single religion under the sun, every single political view and ideology, people have done terrible things and quite literally hijacked what would have otherwise been a peaceful belief system or, you know, spiritual journey in life. And so with that said, being a Christian in today's society is not as easy as it seems, because you've got other people out there going underneath that that label, so to speak, and they don't even understand what it means to truly be a man that follows the teachings of Christ. And if you're running around dropping the N-word on people, my God said, and it's the same God related to Jesus Christ, said that what you do unto the least of me, you do unto me. And so, if I'm going to talk to somebody like that, I might as well just go up and say, hey, God, bleepity bleep bleep, what the heck you want to do about it, you know, and get struck by lightning, because that's the way, you know what I mean?
I mean, I've met people that are friends of mine, Shaziz, that have actually become Christian people, and I'm like, if this is the way you know God, or you know the Creator, then every step you take, please do it. If this is way that you know, have that one-on-one relationship with your Creator, please do that. Okay? I had a friend of mine that actually came to me one time, and he said, I feel so blessed, and I'm so, you know, I'm so happy. And I'm like, what happened? We just met, you know, a little bit later, you know. I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, I have now become become a Christian. I said, well, I'm proud for you, right? You know, fantastic. We'll worship together sometimes, both ways, you know, if that's what you want. He said, yeah, I just become a Christian, and thank God we got the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, man.
And I'm sitting here going, what does the Klan have to do with that?
That's the whole thing. You know, I even went back to, you know, and if you're Catholic, don't get offended by what I'm fixing to say, because that's not that. You know, look, I even go back to about when they talked about in the old days about witch burnings and crusades and all that kind of stuff. Had I have been alive in those days, if I had the heart that I got right now, if I had the spirituality that I am, that is me, I would not have partook in any kind of deal that would treat anybody like that. If you understand what I'm trying to say. And so, under the guise of Christianity, every time you talk about Christianity, people who don't believe in a higher power or anything always bring up the Crusades. Well, the Christians did this and the Christians did that. No, the Christians did not do that. People under the Christian name did that. However, if they were following the true teachings of Christ, they would have had no part in that scenario. That's the whole thing. And whether you're a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Muslim or a naturalist or whatever belief system you got under there, if you're under the impression of do no harm to others, that kind of stuff, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, then I'm right there with you, brother, sister, I'm right there with you. Because that's what my messenger told me, you know, my God, my Savior, or whatever, you know, however it ends up turning out. I got the message. I honestly received the message, and I believe the message, and so I'm out here trying to do something proactive to making this world a better place. And to understand that we all have different visions of what needs to be done, and we all have different opinions and likes and dislikes and stuff. But there ain't no way that I'm any better than you because of what color you are or what you believe in. I just have to let my light shine, and hopefully if I'm doing the right thing, you might want to adopt that into your life. That's what I believe. That's what the teachings told me.
I have to walk this journey on this earth walk myself. I can't be judging other people. And the way I look at things, if there is only one judge, and he is not of this world, and he is the creator of this world, and he said, thou shalt not judge. I'm not going to sit here and judge somebody.
Yep. Well, you know, we're all human, and we make mistakes, and we have made mistakes through this entire journey, which I feel like has been a learning experience all along. But now here we are in the here and now. Faith and justice, you know, it's not just for government, it's for people, you know, justice of how you treat your neighbor and how your neighbor treats you and the fairness between the two of you and that kind of stuff.
Faith, exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, in tribal, back during the time when we were all tribal, we had that way of dealing with. If there was someone in the tribe who was disruptive, if there was someone in the tribe who spoke untruths, if there was someone in the tribe who was constantly inciting, the people themselves made personal judgments, and those personal judgments were to turn away, to not speak to them, to not add to more or less ignore them, to mm-hmm. the point to where this person either learned the lesson that was trying to be taught, or the person moved on. And this is you know, we used to have what was called our peers, and we came together, and we had a moral code at that time. We had a way of validating each other and validating our own lives, right?
Yeah.
Well, then we bring in law, and law begins to make, and this is the law of the churches, of religion, as well as the law of governments. And these laws incrementally are set up to create biases, to create designations, and to create separation between the people, to say this person has this rights, this person doesn't have these rights, and this person is saved, this person is not saved. They came in and split up that tribal cohesiveness, that we all knew that we lived together and that each one of us was totally individual, that we had our own desires, our own way of doing things, and we did just fine. There was no problems, because we accepted the fact that you have the right to do whatever you want. I may not like what you do. I may think that what you're doing is totally absurd. But if you're not harming me, I ain't worried about it. But if what you do comes over and messes with me, then we're going to have to talk about it, right? We're going to have to deal with it. That's the way it used to be. Yeah. It's not that way anymore.
No, it's not. Nowadays, you're guilty until proven innocent. And Mae said in the deal, savior programming in twisted teachings under the guise of faith. And that's probably what I'm trying to say is that... You know, things get hijacked all the time. The Republican Party, the Democrat Party, every single faith under the sun get hijacked by people who twist the words that are spoken. Like, for example, in the Constitution it says, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Those words mean something. And in the Ten Commandments it says, thou shalt not kill. It means something. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts under subsection D in Article B in fine print of paragraph C. It plainly states, thou shalt not kill. Doesn't give any justification for running around killing each other. So if you're killing each other under the names of what you perceive God to be or not, that's wrong. That's wrong in my book. It's wrong to violate people's rights. Yeah.
Here's what I think. Now, this is a couple of things I think. Number one, as far as the Constitution and the Second Amendment goes, if you have the right to bear arms, and it's in the Constitution, it's your right. So, what are we doing with the NRA anyway? So, basically, another thing, the way I've seen it in America throughout history, I'm just going to say throughout history, and throughout, you know, the 240 some odd years of America. If you're a Christian country, like America is supposed to be, and if you believe thou shalt not kill, then why do you put the name killing in the name of God in the first place?
Yeah, I understand that. And, you know, basically there is a phrase that says that if you live by the sword, you shall surely die by the sword. So you have to know that if you decide to pick up arms, that your chances of that coming back on you is pretty good. You know.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but you also have to look at you know, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, right?
Yeah.
Let me go a little farther with you. How come in the past, you know, you have even since Jesus Christ? Okay. When you live by peace, you die by violence.
Yeah, well, that's another one of the sad things in life, that those that are peaceful are usually end up being the victims, and that's, you know, that's not good.
So basically, what I'm saying, Shiz, is that if I live by the peace that I got from that vision that I had.
Yep.
And all these flags are coming in, and I'm speaking loud about having peace in the world. So, if I'm speaking of peace, is that the way I'm going to go too?
Well,
which I'm good at. I don't have a problem. You can't stop my spirit if you kill me anyway.
Well, brother, here's what I told you in the past, and it stands as true as when I told you the first time, as it says right now, is that, you know, while you're on your spiritual journey to lift those flags up to bring people together, if you fall in the middle of that battle, I'm coming right behind you and I'll finish the job. And hopefully that if I fall in the process, somebody else is going, because what we're doing here is so much more important. You know, peace never came from the end of the barrel of a gun. It never came from the end of a sword, and it never will. And for us to want a better world means that, you know, some of us are probably going to be persecuted along the way. History's already shown that people that walk in peace and try to do the right thing and bring the communities together, others that don't like the idea of peace because peace isn't profitable. War sell drugs, war sell guns, war sell food and machinery and everything, all the weapons. If you really seriously take and factor in what it actually takes to move an army from one shore to another shore, and how much food and medicine and ammunition and weapons of war and mass destruction, how much all that costs and how much money is made when you killing people over there and they're shipped back in body bags, those are paid for whenever you finally have to put them in the grave, the coffin, the funeral, the fuel to get everybody there, the citizens that put their cards out there for sympathy and all that kind of stuff. It's a money-making scam that is being perpetrated on the peaceful people of the world. While we're sitting out here shouting peace and love and can't we all get along, somebody on the other side is going war, war, war.
Now, if you notice, I can do these shows for like 3 hours at a time, okay? I can do 3 hour shows and not be interrupted.
Yeah.
You know, or cut off, okay? I did a show with an individual for an hour a couple of days ago. And it's gotten to the point that when I say a prayer, I get thrown off.
Well,
a prayer, for God's sake.
With that said, since we are actually getting close to the time to close this show, we're going to make sure you get to have your last word first so that you can get your prayer out, and then we'll finish up. But, you know, it's important. It's important that people find something to have faith in. It's important for people to have faith in justice. You know, if justice doesn't prevail, then we can't even possibly dream of a better world. We can't possibly dream of freedom. But it's a responsibility of the individual to, whenever you feel strongly about your rights being violated, that you speak out. And that you do it in the most peaceful manner as possible, not giving the bad side the opportunity to have any justification for attacking you or imprisoning you and such. You need to gather together with your fellow brothers and sisters, your neighbors and your communities, and you need to go to your public meetings and you need to speak respectfully to these people. And when they're not responding to you, when they're not recognizing that you are, you know, born with God-given rights and you actually have a constitution that's supposedly there to protect you and they are there to be your public servants, when they do not uphold the job of being a public servant, then it is up to you, the people, to vote them out of office or whatever it takes, you know, get them out of office. Because if they're not doing the job, they shouldn't be sitting in that seat. They shouldn't be sitting in a position of power. Term limits is something that needs to seriously be looked into for judges, for senators and congressmen. Because it's never going to change as long as the seed of corruption is the only thing being planted in the place that they call Washington D.C. or in your local you know, government's buildings and such. When police officers don't want to hear you quoting the Constitution that they swore to uphold, you got a problem. When judges do the same thing, and when you don't have no remedy and no voice, then the government is now out of control. It's not no longer working for the people. When you go into a courtroom and you don't even know what the terminology is allowed, what the terminology isn't allowed, all terminology should be allowed in court, because the First Amendment to the United States Constitution says you have the right to speak out to your government. And when that fails, when the system fails, there's only one other alternative before you actually go to the worst case scenario, which is to quite literally bring your militia against said tyrannical system. I never want to see that happen. And that's why I say the things that I say out here, hoping that these words of wisdom will resonate throughout the land and that we can find a peaceful resolution to make everybody happy and that we can erase these barriers and these lines and these labels that keep all of us separated. The things that we could accomplish as humanity are so incredible. We have capabilities and potentials and resources of an epic scale. And if we ever decided to become that piece of a puzzle that joined in with the other pieces of the puzzle, which is your brothers and sisters around here, the ones that have the talents and the skills and the dreams and the inventiveness to create a better world, when you bring all them pieces of the puzzle together, all the different, if you ever look at a really beautiful picture of any puzzle, there's so many different colors. All the colors of a rainbow are represented in a puzzle. And when those pieces fit together perfectly, you have a beautiful picture. And that's what we're trying to do here. You're that missing piece of the puzzle. And you're just as important as all the other pieces of that puzzle. And if those other pieces of the puzzle who claim themselves to be representatives of you, the people, and they're not doing the job, or they are belittling your rights and not wanting to recognize that you have a right to speak, that you have a right to tell your truth, then you're living in a tyrannical system. And when the money system of this world allows people to get by with quite literal murder and even worse, there are so many things worse than death, believe me. I've seen some terrible things. I've seen things in my lifetime that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes upon. Things that have saddened my heart beyond all comprehension. This is why I'm so passionate on this show. This is why there are times on this show where you actually hear me choke up where I'm about to go to tears because I want peace in this world. I want love to reign supreme. And the only way that I can do that is if this message resonates with you, you share it with somebody else and you bring them to the table. Just like Patty spends her time here on this Knights of the Round Table as one of the Honorable Knights and then speaks her truth out there and can freely do it without having to have any fear of retribution that her words are going to be offensive to somebody, Two Dog has the same right, the same privilege, the same everything. He's my brother. She's my sister. Barbara and all these people that take their time to spend the time in the chat, they're the ones that are going to secure at least a hope for my children and my children's children and their children's children a chance at a decent future. Now, we can either sit back and complain about everything that is wrong about this world, or we can actually take all the power that is us, the true power of the spoken word and our actions and so on, to literally pave the stones into the future. And if words is the only tool that we've got, then by God, you're going to hear these words on the Knights of the Round Table because we do believe in truth and justice. Right now, my faith in justice is shaky because I've seen the way that the system is violating the people of this world. I know that there's somebody in this world doing without. They shouldn't be hungry in this world. We're living year 2018 with amazing technology. Should be no hunger. Shouldn't even be no sickness. Shouldn't even be no homelessness. There should be caretakers all over this world taking care of one another. And that's what we believe in. That's why we do and say the things that we do here on the Knights of the Round Table. So I promise Two Dog, he's going to get a chance to say his prayer to his creator. And, you know, he's going to get to go first because we seem to have problems every time he tries. This time around, we're going to make sure he gets it out. Two Dog, it's all yours, brother.
Escape, why, honey? Get your mind to God, Jesus. All the names they call you around the world, hear me. I send a small voice because I am a small man. I'm weak. I send this voice to you. I thank you for the voice. Your voice that I hear in the wind every day. Grandfather, I thank you that you have allowed me to open my eyes in the morning and give me the breath of life every day. I thank you for everything I look at. I thank you for the brothers and sisters that I have. For I am rich, for that money means nothing. Grandfather, look at the young people that are dying right now, and the young babies that are sick around the world of hunger, and may we stop this insanity and start reaching out to the brotherhood of man that you want us to be. And Grandfather, may we always walk with this heartbeat, this drumbeat that is in all of us. Touch our hearts and let us move forward and work together, black, white, yellow, red, and brown, all of your children, that if we are your children, and all of us are your children, then it's time for a great big come together of the righteousness that you want us to be. In all that, I wish to say, throughout the world, may we have peace, love, honor, and respect, for that is what it is to be. Oh, Metakawasi.
Amen, brother. Well, Patty, you're the next line of defense out here in the whole trying to make the world a better place. You got any words of wisdom, lady?
Well, you know, what we allow, we will continue with. As long as we choose to put our faith and our lives in the care of the system, then we will get what the system allows us to have. Your rights didn't come from a piece of paper, neither did mine. They were with me when I took my first breath, and they'll be with me when I take my last breath. The only thing that separates me from any system is my choice. And if you're willing to be led, if you're willing to be controlled, then you can stay right where you're at. But if you want to determine your own happiness, if you want to determine your own life and live under the first law, the Creator's law of do no harm, then that's going to take some doing on your part, and we can't delegate that to an agency. We can't delegate that to an administration. We cannot expect anyone in a system of control not to control us. And that's what we have in religions and in governments, the school systems. If your government passes laws that are arbitrary and against the first law, then you are being controlled. And it will not stop. It will not stop, because that is the nature of government. The snake is a snake, and a government is a government. It doesn't matter what name it has. We can make a better way. We have the ability, we have the power, we have the intelligence, we have the drive, we have the desire to make a world that is not only able to promote life, but can promote safety, abundance, and happiness for each and every individual out there, without infringing on each other's rights to be. But we have to look at this, and we have to look at history, and we have to go way back to the very beginning, and we have to watch how governments were formed, under what guise, how religions were formed, and under what guise, and how one civilization led to another government, how one religion led to another religion, and how they all wind up with the same outcome. No government has ever been built that did not seek to control. No religion was ever created that did not seek to put judgment on the people. So here we go. Do we continue do we continue on the same path? Tearing down this civilization, building up more governments. Tearing down the religions, building up more religions. Or do we start standing up for ourselves, for each other, and for the world that we truly want and the world we can truly have? We're not lacking anything. We've got everything we need. They don't have anything. The control has nothing without us. We have everything without them. Just something to think about. Love to each and everybody. Thanks.
Same to you, and that's, I agree. The choice, look folks, the choice has always been up to the people. Choice has always been yours. And all hope is not lost until it's gone. But once it's gone, it's gone. And once the beast finally gets total control, darkness rules over goodness. And, you know, that's the world that we live in. That's not the world that I choose. And so I'm standing up with my voice, and I'm standing up with these wonderful Knights of the Round Table, and each of you that take the time to listen in and then share these messages. We are not helpless, and we are not hopeless. Until all is over, until it's over, it ain't over. And in my spiritual journey, it says that no man would know the time or date. He'd come like a thief in the night, which tells me that I don't know when the last day is going to be. But I'm not going to sit around idly by and allow as darkness runs roughshod over my God's people. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to speak the truth when it's time to speak the truth, and I'm going to take action when it's time to take action. And that's what each one of you need to understand, that you are so much of more of an important person when it comes to justice, that you stand up and you fight for justice. And when I say fight, I'm not talking about you have to go out and get violent. And unless it's a worst case scenario, then there ain't no need to get violent to protect yourself. But what I'm saying, when I say to stand up for justice, is when you hear somebody speaking out against somebody falsely, that you stand up and you set the record straight. No, I witnessed this whole deal. This isn't how it played out. This isn't what the law says. This isn't what the Constitution says. This isn't what my belief system says. You stand up for one another. You raise that power of the spoken word up to the highest levels as you possibly can, and you be heard. That's the way it was supposed to be. That's what you were meant for. To be a good caretaker, a servant to your brothers and sisters out there. And if you're not happy being a servant to your brothers and sisters, then you can't expect them to be the same to you. It's just that simple. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If you like anything that you've heard on here, any of this message resonates with you, please honor all of us for doing and taking the time to share this message with you by sharing it with somebody else. Because the message is only as good as the number of people that can hear it and listen to it and take it to heart and at least contemplate on, you know, what to do next. You can move this forward just by sending this message out to somebody who needs to hear it. Somebody needs to know that they're important too. Now these protests out here, they don't got it right. They should be gathering with their brothers and sisters in peace and trying to find a time to get their representatives at the table and sit there and address these concerns as peacefully as possible. War should be the very last resort. I don't ever want to see a second revolution here in the United States of America, because I know exactly how it's going to end up, and it ain't going to end up in the favor of anybody. It never does. Peace never came from the end of a barrel of a gun. Peace never come from the end of a sword. Peace only come from common sense and respect, and those who treat one another as equals.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society.
if there's ever going to be any progress.
There is some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I am your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We'll do routines to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise to our quiet unsing able. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible, always working to serve the terrible and the knights of the round table.